Think I Know Where You Belong by 20-something. Read by X-Man-Hater. Summary. Castiel wishes he wasn't this excited, but it's the best part of his night when Dean Winchester gets home from baseball practice. Castiel is fiddling with his post-it flags, wondering if he should mark the diagram or the text about separation of powers, when he sees a light turn on from the corner of his eye. He scrambles for the huge pad of paper and the thick Sharpie he buys in 5-packs just for this reason, craning his neck around to take a look in the mirror hanging over his dresser. Same inevitably messy dark hair, giant glasses, and pale face as usual, but no pen on his face or stuff between his teeth or anything. Castiel wishes he wasn't this excited, but it's the best part of his night when Dean Winchester gets home from baseball practice. Sure enough, Dean looks tired and sort of dirty and wonderful. He drops his glove and bat to the floor, using his now free hand to gesticulate wildly. Castiel realizes he has to be on the phone with Joe because no one else makes Dean that upset. He averts his eyes, flicking the blue and pink tags spread over the edge of his textbook. He knows that just because Dean has his curtains open, it's not a free invitation into his life. Still, Castiel can't help but think sometimes, very quietly in the middle of the night, that there has to be a reason his family moved in next door to the Winchesters, and that Dean's window is right next to his. Then again, Dean was homecoming king and Castiel is first clarinet in the concert orchestra and pep band. They don't exactly have a lot in common. But when Dean smiles, Castiel can't breathe, and when Dean laughs, silent through 2 panes of glass, Castiel would give anything to be the one who makes that happen. So instead of finishing his homework, he sneaks another look across to see Dean flip his phone shut and throw it at his bed, running a hand through his hair. Castiel frowns and writes quickly. "Are you all right?" he asks, holding up the artist's sketch pad. Dean flops down on his bed and after a moment or two, when he looks over, grimaces slightly. Castiel is starting to think that, finally, after 3 years, Dean has decided this thing is, these notes they sort of pass, is too intrusive, too juvenile, too something, when Castiel realizes he's just writing back. Joe is complaining about prom again, is pushed up against the opposite window. Dean's handwriting, slanted and messy at the best of times, is near illegible, but Castiel has seen and heard enough of these arguments for a lifetime. Joe wants the picture book prom, the giant limo, the huge expensive dinner, the giant corsage, the after party, all of it. It's not that Dean wouldn't give it to her, it's just not what he wants to do. Joe has had to drag Dean to the last 4 dances under increasing amounts of duress. Castiel has any number of sentiments about the situation, least of which being he would walk through hell with no shoes if he got to go to prom with Dean, so instead he goes a more direct route. Castiel quickly draws the frowning face. Dean smirks slightly, and his shoulders move somewhere between a shrug and a snort. He rolls his eyes as if to say, "Tell me about it." Castiel bites his lower lip, looking down at the paper, wondering what to write back that's true and not "I love you" written 100 times all over the paper. But when he looks back up, the curtains are already closed. Castiel is still tapping his marker absently and sighing at the dark blue window across the way when he hears his door creak open. "You know," Michael says, staring at the big, smiley face across the paper. "They have these things called cell phones. You can use them to text each other." Michael sits on top of the dresser, shoving Castiel's backpack to the floor. "Although, you know, I take it back. Don't, Castiel. Winchester is a moron." Castiel frowns deeply. "Michael, Dean is perfect," Castiel replies stubbornly, "because it's true. And not just because Dean is the captain of the baseball team, or the most popular boy in school, or because he's honestly beautiful, but because he drives his brother Sam to school every day, and is going to college entirely on scholarships he earned not just through sports, and in winter, when it's too cold and icy to bike, Dean makes him get in the car too. Dean is perfect because he's nice to little kids and animals even when other guys are looking, and he works at a job he hates so he can do stuff like rent limos, to take Joe to dances and buy her flowers on her birthday, even when he doesn't want to." Michael rolls his eyes. "Castiel, it's adorable that you've been brainwashed by exposure into the world's most hideous man-crush, but Dean Winchester is so far from perfect that I cannot even begin to describe all the ways he's inappropriate." Castiel wishes Michael weren't home on spring break, but then takes it back immediately. After all, Michael is his older brother. And privately, since the only time Castiel brought it up, Michael hadn't talked to him for a whole day, Castiel thinks Michael doesn't like Dean because they're so alike. Castiel is sure his facial expression is some variety of stubborn and irritated, which explains why Michael rolls his eyes, but smiles and ruffles Castiel's hair. Okay, whatever, just do your homework, Michael instructs, walking out, leaving the door a hair ajar. Castiel sighs and attempts to fix his hair, which just makes it look even more bizarre and rumpled. He finally settles down to finishing his government reading. If the other curtain twitches open a couple of times to watch him read, Castiel doesn't notice. The next day, Castiel wakes up feeling inexplicably cheerful and reckless, so he doesn't wear a sweater over his button-down shirt and soft old khakis. He just brings a windbreaker in case it rains and laces his dark blue sneakers tightly before bolting out the door. The weather is beautiful and perfect, spring at its best, and Castiel knows today is going to be wonderful when he sees Dean tossing his backpack into the back seat of his car. You're early, Dean calls, and Castiel is awed at the implication that Dean Winchester has any idea whatsoever of his schedule. It's a nice day, Castiel replies, because, one, it is, and two, it's better than saying something like, good morning, I love you. Dean smiles, and Castiel is overwhelmingly positive that this is maybe the single greatest day ever. And because today is the greatest day ever, Castiel hazards even more conversation. How was your night? Dean rolls his eyes. Had to read, like, all of Gilgamesh. I swear, Cass, my English teacher is a sadist, he protests, but there's still a hint of a smile that makes Castiel clutch the handlebars of his bike a little tighter. But for real, though, it wasn't so bad. There were battles and bros and prostitutes and stuff. I was pretty surprised. Castiel blinks for a moment, because he's heard Gilgamesh paraphrased before, but that was rather succinct, if vague. The epics were as entertainment for ancient cultures, Castiel finds himself saying. I suppose tastes haven't changed much since then. Dean stares at him for a moment, and Castiel is about to say something along the lines of, not that there is anything wrong with that, when Dean just bursts out laughing. While Castiel doesn't understand what's so funny, he's happy, nonetheless, to make Dean laugh. Dean trails off finally and grins, wide and wonderful, and he leans slightly so his hip is pressed against the door of his car. Just don't change, Cass, ever, Dean says. Castiel has always wondered what exactly sets him apart, from his family, from his friends, what makes them pause a moment before responding, but this is the first time anyone has made him feel like maybe that's not a bad thing. Castiel feels warm down to his toes. I won't, he says, soft, a promise, because Dean asked. Dean looks like he's about to say something when Sam flies out the door trailing a messenger bag, a bagel, and a coat. Hey, Cass, morning, Sam calls around the bagel, waving the hand not holding the coat. Castiel waves back because Sam is 3 years younger than him, but maybe one of the brightest, nicest people he's ever met, and coincidentally already 3 inches taller than Castiel and still growing. Good morning, Sam, Castiel replies. Dean motions back and forth to Castiel in the car. You want a ride, Cass? I gotta drop Sammy off first, but you should come along, Dean offers. Castiel is possibly in another plane of happiness. I don't have practice this afternoon, so I can drive you home, too. Castiel can hardly trust himself to talk, so he just nods and manages a thank you as he puts his bike back in the garage. The ride to drop Sam off at the middle school is uneventful, if uneventful covers 5 frantic text messages from Michael asking if he really just saw Castiel getting into Dean's car, and 3 follow-up links to sex offender websites. Dean eyeballs him with a casual, "Your phone is blowing up, man," and Castiel deletes them all with a smile. They circle around the front of Sandra Day O'Connor Middle School and drop Sam off. There are about 15 eighth graders standing around in clumps, some waiting for Sam, but most of them look like they want nothing more than to be the person getting into the passenger seat of Dean's car. But today that's him. So you're reading Gilgamesh? Castiel prompts. Not because the silence is awkward. Castiel never thinks silence is awkward, but because he likes to hear Dean's opinions on things. The conversations always lead somewhere unexpected, and the insight they provide into the way Dean thinks is like a glimpse through a keyhole of a door he would like to open. Dean sort of smiles, just a quick hint of amusement. Yeah, we had a choice to read It or Beowulf, and I had to hear all about it last year to help Sam with this terrible art project of his. No way was I putting myself through that again, Dean says with an exaggerated eye roll. Although no one told me it was a love story, God. Castiel blinks. What? He asks delicately, because while he enjoys Dean's train of thought, he usually finds himself totally incapable of following it, much to his chagrin. Dean waves a hand loosely. You know, Gilgamesh and Enkidu, Like, there's romance, and then there's weeping for 50 pages that your boyfriend is dead. It was like Brokeback Mesopotamia, Dean argues. Really, Castiel has no idea what to even attempt to say, because he's still stuck on the fact that what Dean got out of the Epic of Gilgamesh was bros, battles, prostitutes, and gay demigods. It was still cool, though. I have never really thought about it from that perspective before, Castiel admits. Dean shrugs. God, Sam looked like I had punched thousands of years of established literary interpretation in the face when I said that. But then again, Sam still thinks Bert and Ernie are roommates, Dean says, rolling his eyes. Castiel frowns. Are they not? He asks, because he's mostly certain they live together. Dean stares at Castiel, which is somewhat concerning considering he's still driving the car. Cass, they're gay too, Dean insists. Castiel blinks. That puts an entirely new spin on Sesame Street. So you're saying that you believe Bert and Ernie to be lovers? Castiel asks. He supposes they could be common-law married, but they seem to argue constantly about living conditions, which doesn't make for a solid foundation for a relationship, or so Dr. Phil claims. Dean is still staring at him, but at least they're at a stoplight. Did you seriously just say lovers? Dean demands of him, and Castiel nods. Okay, but just don't, because then I had to imagine Muppet sex, and oh god, I just did it again. Castiel tilts his head to the side, but still can't picture it. They pull into the parking lot at school, Dean slipping into his space smoothly. Castiel sort of wishes he had thought to have Dean drop him off somewhere else, but then he would have had to explain that he's sort of worried he's going to get shoved every time someone throws up a hand for Dean to lazily high-five as they walk into school, Dean saying something about the fascist nature of the school parking system. Through some sort of cosmic sign or possibly joke, Dean's locker is right next to Castiel's, across from the cafeteria. So anyway, the point is, see you in physics, Cass, Dean says, only to be tackled back against his locker by a cloud of blonde hair and perfume. You didn't call me back last night, Joe accuses, poking a finger into Dean's chest. Dean frowns. You told me not to, Joe. You said to call you on the 5th of never, Dean says. Castiel hides his face in his locker, trying to look like he's attempting to put his coat in, not eavesdropping shamelessly. Dean, I was upset. You were obviously supposed to call back, she insists. But I forgive you. They're suddenly silent, so Castiel finally closes his locker and... Oh. Joe has Dean pressed back against the locker, and she is kissing him insistently. Castiel's good day has gone straight into the garbage, so he just drops a quiet, see you in physics, Dean, and walks away toward his English class, clutching his copy of Beloved because he sort of feels sick to his stomach. Castiel had a lot to say about traditional slave narratives and guilt in the supernatural, written in precise blue pen in the margins of the pages, but instead he sits quietly in the front row, picking at a piece of tape shredded and stuck to the desk. 90 minutes goes slowly, but way too fast. Castiel finds himself grabbing his book bag and slipping through the hall to go sit behind the battered lab table in the science wing. When he'd walked into the classroom on the first day, Dean had waved him over to the table and gleefully pointed out, scratched into the surface, "Michael Meyer has crabs." Dean had chortled through most of the first class, and Castiel still sighs over it. He keeps asking Michael why someone would have taken the time to scratch a claim that he has pubic lice into a desk, but he has never gotten a satisfactory answer. "So sorry about that, earlier," Dean says, dropping heavily into the seat next to him. "Joe sometimes is, Castiel tries to be both helpful and tactful. "Tempestuous?" Castiel supplies. Dean raises his eyebrows. "I was going to say a bitch, but that works too," Dean grins back. Castiel feels uncomfortable sharing in the joke, when, in his more uncharitable moments, he's thought similar things, but without the raw current of fondness that underlies Dean's snipe. "She's just... it's important to her, right? So it should be important to me too, right?" Dean runs a frustrated hand through his hair. Castiel frowns. "Dean, shouldn't the thing that is important to Joe be going with you, not how she goes?" Castiel asks quietly, trying to parse the surprised expression that appears on Dean's face. "Thanks, Cass," Dean finally says, and then scrambles to pull his textbook and binder out as Dr. Singer walks in. "You're welcome, Dean," Castiel replies in a whisper. They have a pop quiz, which abruptly ends their conversation, but Dean seems thoughtful and withdrawn the rest of the class, heading out to lunch with a simple, Meet you in the parking lot to reassure Castile that he hasn't forgotten his offer to drive him home. I hope I didn't say anything that upset him, Castile says, idly tapping his carrot stick against his snapple. Gabriel stares at him. Castile, seriously, he's not a unicorn, he's a dude, and I think he can handle you giving him some actual good advice, Gabriel says, pulling out another pixie stick from the rapidly dwindling pack. You're going to get juvenile diabetes, Castile says sadly. Anna snorts. He's going to get put back on Ritalin, she accuses fondly. More importantly, Castile, you said what was on your mind and you told the truth. You can't be a better friend than that. Gabriel shrugs.
Well, you could push Joe down the stairs, Gabriel offers.
Anna pinches him viciously because Castile is still staring, horrified. What? Gabriel, I don't wish Joe any physical harm, Castile says bleakly. Gabriel eyes Castile with extreme prejudice. But you kind of wish all her hair would fall out of her head and she'd suddenly become a lesbian, Gabriel says. By the way, I can make at least half of that happen. Just say the word, man. Anna pinches Gabriel even harder. Jesus Christ, Anna, quit it, Gabriel whines. But he's been half a head shorter than Anna for 2 years, despite his sullen assertions that he is still due another growth spurt. Castile sighs. Look, he's still driving you home, right? If he's still in a funk and it's really bothering you, just ask, Anna advises. Castile smiles softly. Anna is always thoughtful and gives the best advice, and Gabriel wouldn't offer to do terrible things if he didn't mean it, and he wouldn't mean it unless he cared. You're right, thank you, Anna, Castile says, and Gabriel rolls his eyes. Oh, nice. She gets the thank you for being dear Abby, and I get pin- Ow! Anna, Gabriel hisses. Anna smiles at Gabriel sweetly. It wouldn't hurt so much if there wasn't so much of you to pinch, she replies breezily. Gabriel stares at her. So now you're calling me fat? He demands. Castile just smiles fondly as he finishes his lunch, feeling much more at ease with the world. After lunch, he cheerfully answers questions about judicial review and the branches of government, and when class is over, he stops by his locker to grab his copy of Virgil before heading to study hall. He technically shares this class with Dean, too, but more often than not, Dean is nowhere to be found. However, today Dean is sitting right in the middle of the lecture hall, and when he sees Castile walk in, he motions toward the empty desk next to him. Bella Talbot gives him the mother of all dirty looks, but he obediently takes the seat offered. Hello, Dean, Castile says quietly. He doesn't believe in talking in study hall, but it's still 5 minutes until the hour. Class hasn't officially started yet. Castile doesn't say, I'm surprised to see you, because that sounds sort of rude, like he expected Dean to skip class, although he usually does. Instead, he places his book on the desk calmly. Hey, Cass, Dean says at his usual volume, which causes Bella to glare at Castile again. So, about what you said earlier. Dean trails off and then looks irritated. An apology is already forming behind Castile's lips when Dean continues. Do you think I should say something to her? Dean asks, still looking irritated, but there's a hint of a flush on his ears and neck, and oh, he's embarrassed. Castile has no idea why, but there it is. Dean, it seems to be a huge issue in your relationship. Castile stumbles over the word because the irony of the situation is overwhelming. He spends most of his time wishing there was no relationship, and here he seems to be helping Dean repair it. Dean rolls his eyes. I feel like a girl, Dean sighs. I hate talking about this stuff, and Sam never shuts up about it. Castile blinks, because he hadn't thought Dean was displaying any feminine behavior, and tells him as much. Dean barks out a laugh, garnering a hissed, "Shut up!" from Bella, as Ms. Barnes walks in and parks herself in the front with a badly disguised romance novel. Dean pulls out a piece of paper. Anyway, so I saw you at lunch, Dean writes, handwriting familiar and terrible and dear. You're pretty close with Anna, huh? Castile smiles, pulling out a sheet of paper himself. Anna is a very good friend. Castile writes, wondering absently where Dean was sitting, because he hadn't seen him at lunch.
So are you going to, I don't know, ask her to prom?
Dean scratches it out. Castile blinks and stares at Dean because, A, Anna would laugh in his face, friend or no, and B, he had thought it was more than obvious that he was not interested in women. I wasn't planning on it, no, he writes back carefully. Dean frowns.
Why not? It looks like she really likes you, Dean scribbles out, lightning fast. Castiel raises both his eyebrows. Dean, Anna knows I am a homosexual. I sincerely doubt that she is harboring any unrequited feelings for me, Castiel explains. What? Dean shouts. Ms. Barnes looks up quickly. I don't care how handsome you are, Dean. Keep it zipped, she says, immediately putting her face back in her book. Dean blushes bright red, but instead writes, What? In huge capitals, underlining it twice. Castiel feels like he's swallowing around a knot. I have had homo written on my locker several times, Dean. I would have thought you knew. Castiel writes, trying to stay calm and ignoring the slight tremor in the shapes of his L's and T's. I thought that was just guys messing around. I always took care of... Dean pauses, knuckles white around the wood of the pencil. You should have told me. Castiel frowns. I did not think my sexual orientation was any secret, he manages, before Dean shakes his head violently. No, no, did anyone? Dean starts again, then scribbles it out. Has anyone ever messed with you, Cass? His pencil stays frozen over the paper for a moment. I mean, more than those assholes, no one's ever. Dean runs a hand through his hair. You're okay, right? Castiel blinks and looks at Dean, who looks stressed and angry, and it feels like his chest is too tight because Dean is worried about him. I am fine, Dean, Castiel writes, as reassuringly as he can, because there had been a moment of sheer terror when he realized Dean had honestly not known, and his reaction could have been so... But Dean is concerned. Dean smiles, wide, relieved, and it's like the sun parting the clouds after it rains. Castiel is not sure what to say, but Dean starts, like someone had jabbed him with a pin. You're not, Dean tries, hesitates, continues. You're not taking Gabriel to prom, are you? Castiel bites back a laugh, sudden and amused. No, Dean, I am not, Castiel promises. Dean heaves a seemingly involuntary sigh of relief. Good, he writes, and Castiel has a moment of blind hope before Dean goes on. You could do so much better. Castiel resists the urge to bury his face in his hands. It's not Dean's fault that Castiel is in love with him and has been for years. It's not Dean's fault that he likes women. It's not Dean's fault that Castiel cannot see past him to ever wanting anyone else. But it's still remarkably frustrating. Thank you, Castiel finally writes when he realizes some sort of response other than lovelorn silence is probably required. Dean shrugs. It's true, you're the nicest guy I know, Dean writes back, with the sort of lazy assurance that means he really thinks that, and Castiel's heart aches. He wishes he could just be happy with this, with the warmth and weight of Dean's regard, and he's happy, he is. But it's just not enough. Anyway, crap, Dean writes, hissing slightly under his breath. Coach assigned an emergency practice this afternoon. He thinks we're going to get our asses handed to us on Saturday otherwise. Dean rolls his eyes. If you want, I'll give you the keys to the Impala. You can drive yourself home and I'll walk back. Castiel shakes his head because there is no way he's making Dean walk home, exhausted, after practice. He would get hit by a truck. No, it's fine. I can walk, Castiel writes, but Dean shakes his head. No way. I offered you a ride this morning. I shouldn't bail on you, Dean explains. Castiel pauses. Well, I could stay. He vainly tries not to blush when Dean looks at him curiously. I could do my homework? Dean raises his eyebrows, but he's smiling. You mean because I'm stopping you from getting it done now? He teases. Are you sure you don't mind? Castiel swallows against a suddenly dry throat at the thought of watching Dean practice in his tight baseball uniform. I don't mind at all, Castiel writes, and it's the honest truth. Dean shrugs. Okay, it's going to be boring, though, Dean warns him. Castiel smiles weakly and taps against Virgil. I will bring a book, he promises, although he doubts poor Virgil will be getting much, if any, of his attention this afternoon. Dean snorts. All right, maybe not compared to that, Dean says, and pulls out some calculus homework. Castiel attempts to do some reading, but he can't stop thinking about how Dean's first instinct was to protect him, and that Dean thinks he deserves good things, and he hopes no one notices he has not moved off page 137 in a half an hour. When the bell finally rings, Castiel almost jumps as Dean slaps a companionable hand on his shoulder. You'll be in the bleachers, right? Dean asks. Cass nods slightly, because he wouldn't miss this for the world. Okay, see you there. It's more or less as bad as he thought it would be.
Dean is golden in the late spring sunlight, squinting into the sun under his cap, loose and pleased, shoving his teammates idly, skidding into bases with the same determined gracelessness he brings to everything, unpracticed and unaffected. Dean is himself because he doesn't know how to be anything else, and Castiel both envies and admires him for it. He doesn't register the laughter for a long time, between watching Dean avidly behind Virgil and polishing his glasses, which seem impossibly smudged in the sunlight. But eventually he notices the two boys he thinks are sophomores sitting a few rows behind him. When Castiel turns to look at them, they break off into smirks. While Castiel would never describe himself as an excellent judge of interpersonal behavior, there is something distinctly unpleasant about the way they're looking at him that he has seen on playgrounds and in the back of study halls since he was a child. He's not sure whether it will be better or worse if he just goes back to what he was doing, but nothing ventured, nothing gained. The moment his back is turned, the laughter starts again.
Are you like his cheerleader? Are you guys going to get married in Canada? Do you think he sucks Winchester's dick? I bet he wants to.
It's not the worst he's ever heard, but there's something about them pulling Dean into it that creates a sick sweep of shame in his stomach. Castiel is not surprised that virtual strangers can tell what he feels for Dean is not strictly platonic, but he just wants to bury his face in his book and pretend he can't hear any of it.
Well, do you, Meyer? He hears louder, the clangor of feet over metal bleachers. Do you suck his dick?
The taller of the two of them plops himself down next to Castiel.
Aw, man, it's not nice to kiss and tell, the other one says,
ensconcing himself on Castiel's other side.
You know Meyer here is a nice boy. I bet he doesn't even let a boy under his bra.
There's nothing he can do but hope that if he doesn't respond, they'll get bored and move on.
Come on, answer, the one to his right elbows him sharply, and Castiel is really not looking forward to where this seems to be going. You might want to get the fuck out of here before I bash your skull in with this bat, assholes.
Castiel's head snaps up. Dean is standing at the foot of the bleachers, his old wooden bat in one hand, the empty hand clenched tightly into a fist.
My batting average is .349, Dean threatens, and the two of them scramble up and out, shoving each other in their haste.
The moment they're careening toward the parking lot, Dean lets out an angry exhale and slams his way up to where Castiel is still frozen in disbelief.
What the hell, Cass? Dean asks, dropping his bat with a clatter.
He grabs Castiel's shoulders and gently moves his head side to side.
Did they hit you? I'll fucking kill them.
Castiel blinks.
You didn't need to do that, Dean, Castiel protests softly.
It would have been fine, he's sure.
Are you kidding me? Cass, you said people didn't mess with you, Dean argues.
He still looks furious, but Castiel can see the concern behind it, and all the tension floods out of him.
It was fine, Castiel promises. Dean blows out a noisy, irritated exhale.
Cass, you have got to be kidding me, Dean says, covering his face with his hands.
All right, come with me.
Castiel raises both his eyebrows.
Are we going home? Castiel asks, looking around the field. Apparently practice is over.
Dean rolls his eyes.
No, I'm going to teach you how to swing a baseball bat, because if I'm not around to deal with shitbags like that, I'm making sure you can take care of yourself.
Dean stands up, brushing at his knees.
God, this is like when I had to teach Sammy how to punch.
Castiel forbears mentioning that he's actually a brown belt in judo, because it seems that this will give Dean some peace of mind, and he has no objections to that. He allows himself to be drawn out to the dusty diamond, the press of Dean's hand hot and slightly damp around his wrist. The last light is orange and hazy as Dean pushes the bat into his hands.
Okay, show me your stance, Dean instructs, taking a few steps back.
Castiel blinks but grips low on the back, fists apart around the cool wood.
Dean shakes his head, but there's a smile finally playing around the corners of his mouth.
Wrong, 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 he says, but he's amused and loose again, and Castiel smiles slightly at that himself.
Narrow your grip, Dean says, reaching out to correct when Castiel doesn't move immediately.
Castiel doesn't have small hands, but Dean's press over his entirely, shifting them together.
Now keep your hands about a foot from your body.
Dean moves one hand to Castiel's shoulder, one over Castiel's hand, almost absently rubbing a thumb over his knuckles.
Good, good, that's good, Dean murmurs, tilting so the bat goes to a 45-degree angle somewhere behind Castiel's head,
and then he slips behind Castiel, leveling his shoulders with a firm touch.
Castiel feels like all the air has been sucked out of him, but he doesn't dare to breathe.
It's like if he moves on his own, the spell will be broken, and Dean has his hands all over him, and he doesn't want it to stop.
Dean presses a palm to Castile's hips, and he feels dizzy, lightheaded, like the moment after a long run where you feel like you're still moving forward, even though you've come to a stop. "Keep your feet shoulder-width apart," Dean says quietly, pressing harder. No, wider. Castile wonders, more desperately than ever, what it would be like to kiss Dean. "All right, take a deep breath," Dean says, and Castile obeys, shaky and frantic. Exhale, swing. The movement is fierce, absolute, and sharp. "Good," Dean repeats in his ear. "Good." Castile feels like every nerve ending in his body is on fire, and he doesn't know how he can possibly be expected to get in a small, enclosed space with Dean and pretend that he's not insanely aroused. They stand like that for an eternity before Dean finally coughs and steps back quickly. "Anyway, now you know, and you can beat the crap out of assholes like those two morons," Dean stammers. "I'm going to go and change and get my backpack. Meet you in the parking lot?" He's already halfway to the locker room entrance by the time he finishes the sentence. It takes Castile another long, stunned moment to start moving toward the bleachers to get his books, still limply holding the bat. The ride home is loud, Dean cranking up the stereo and rolling down the windows, thumbs restlessly tapping against the wheel. They say stilted goodbyes. Something has changed and Castile doesn't know what, but it feels like something is wrong. He feels fretful and strange all evening until he twitches his curtain aside to see a giant sign in front of the curtain in Dean's window. "Stop studying. Go to bed, nerd," smiley face. Castile takes a deep breath, smiles, and turns out the light as he slips under the covers. Saturday morning is lazy and cheerful, even if Michael goes on at length about Castile taking rides from low-class road whores. Castile would be more bothered by it, but his father just hmms from behind his Wall Street Journal, and Mother looks at Michael disapprovingly and talks about sending the Winchesters a seasonally appropriate fruit basket. The weather is stereotypically beautiful spring, cloudless, pale blue skies, and gentle breezes to ruffle the branches. Castile retires to the hammock in the backyard with a battered copy of Metamorphosis as a break from all the Virgil he's been rereading. He dozes off, waking up abruptly when he hears a car door slam. The quality of light suggests it's early afternoon. Castile is still blinking the sleep out of his eyes when his mother opens the French doors with a soft smile and calls out that Castile has a visitor. He hardly has time to sit up before she motions Dean out into the backyard. Dean drops his bat bag and mitt at the base of one of the trees the hammock is attached to before throwing himself into the hammock with a groan, bouncing Castile into the air briefly. There is red ochre all over the front of his white uniform, over the green script reading Firebirds, and smeared across the freckles on the bridge of Dean's nose. "Are you all right, Dean?" Castile asks immediately. Because Dean has an arm flung over his face, but Castile can see the grimace clearly anyway. "Did you not win the game?" Dean sighs messily. "No, we won, that's," he says on an exhale. "So I told Joe what you said, right, about if she wants to go with me, how the limo or whatever shouldn't matter, right?" Castile nods solemnly before he realizes Dean cannot possibly see him through his arm. He ought to verbally answer the question, but apparently it's rhetorical, because Dean continues anyway. "Yeah, so we're sort of broken up," Dean mumbles, and Castile always expected he'd feel nothing but happiness, if, when, Dean said those words. But instead he feels like the bottom of the hammock has just fallen out. Perhaps that's his stomach. "I'm so sorry," Castile says finally, and it's true. He is sorry that Dean feels terrible and that it was his advice that finally did it. He never wanted Joe and Dean to be together, but he didn't want them to break up if it meant Dean wallowing in misery on his hammock either. Dean laughs, but it's not amused. "Yeah, well, it was coming, right? If I couldn't tell her what I really thought about the whole thing? If not taking her to prom, fucking prom, would make her dump me?" Dean gesticulates wildly in the air above him. "It's just the worst thing about it," Dean laughs humorlessly again. "I'm not really that upset. I'm relieved." Castile has no idea what to do. Touching Dean is totally out of the question, considering Dean's side is already pressed up against Castile's hip, but he's never been good with verbal reassurances either. Dean flops his arm down to his side and opens his eyes. "Does that make me a total douchebag? We've been dating for 3 years and now I'm just relieved?" Castile bites his lip. "Sometimes people grow apart," he tries. "Holding on to them can hurt more than letting them go." Dean laughs, something more sincere about it, before he covers his face with his palms again. How do you always say what I want to hear, Cass? Dean mumbles. Seriously, for a guy I've never seen date, you give some zen advice.
Castile shrugs carefully, but the hammock still sways them strangely.
I read a lot, Castile offers. Jane Austen covered a lot of the basics of relationships.
Dean snorts.
Anyway, I didn't mean to dump on you. There's just no one else I can talk to about this, you know?
You're a good listener, Dean says, running a hand through his hair. But then he pauses to look at Castile seriously.
And if you needed someone to talk to, I'm sure I give really shitty advice, but I would listen.
Castile stops himself from sucking in a breath, but just nods, feeling like he's going to burst.
Dean makes a face. Also, sorry I bust up in here. I must reek, Dean says with a bark of laughter, launching himself out of the hammock.
It was a good game, man. You should come sometime.
Castile makes an impulsive, aborted hand motion toward Dean.
Is everything okay? Dean asks, looking slightly puzzled.
Castile makes another terrible, impulsive decision. I do have something to talk about, Castile says, already wishing he had kept his mouth shut.
If you want to listen, you don't have to, Dean shrugs.
We're friends, that's what we do, Dean says, settling himself back into the hammock. Or trying to, but they don't manage to distribute their weight evenly until Dean kicks off his cleats, and they each sit with their back toward a tree, Castile's bare feet next to Dean's dark green socks in the center.
Castile leans his chin on his knees, drawn up to his chest.
So, spill, Dean prompts.
Castile picks at a rough patch on his khakis around the cuff.
If there was someone I liked, a boy, Castile says, hazarding a look up.
Dean looks absolutely gobsmacked, so he backpedals frantically.
Not you, not anyone you know, I just, a boy. Do you think, would he like me?
Dean stares at him. Castile feels utterly mortified beyond all belief and buries his face between his kneecaps.
He freezes when he feels a hand light gently on top of his head.
Hey, Cass. Cass, Dean says quietly. Come on, look at me.
Dean looks thoroughly uncomfortable, but he's smiling, sort of.
Some guy out there somewhere would be lucky to have you. You're awesome.
He makes a face. And I've only ever said that to you and Sammy, and I only meant it with you.
Dean shoves at Castile's foot with one of his.
So, seriously, cheer up. You look like someone ran over your dog, Dean says.
Castile blinks.
I don't have a dog, Castile protests quietly. He wonders why that answer doesn't make him feel any better.
Dean grins.
That's the spirit, Cass, Dean tells him, then swings his feet out.
Seriously, I have to take a shower. I'm gross. But I'll be around tonight. Chuck something at my window if you want to talk.
Dean collects his things and hops the useless fence between their yards with a wave over his shoulder.
Castile lies aimlessly in the hammock until his mother calls him in for dinner.
Was Dean all right, dear? Mother asks, the furrow of concern between her brows indicating she's contemplating upping the fruit basket to homemade cookies.
His father raises his eyebrows but doesn't say anything.
He broke up with his girlfriend, Jo Harvell, Castile says, not sure if he's actually allowed to share the information. However, it's not as though his parents are going to tell anyone either. Plus, Castile believes that his parents already know these kinds of things, even before he tells them. They were having an argument about prom. Michael drops his fork with a clatter against his plate.
He is not allowed to take you to prom, Michael says sharply.
Father, tell him Dean is not allowed to take him to prom.
When Father just shakes his head with a smile, Michael lets loose a despairing wail.
70% of teenage pregnancies happen at prom. Father, do you want Castile to become another statistic?
Mother tuts.
Michael, Castile knows about safe sex, she says, pouring herself another half glass of wine. Our discussion when he was 13 was extremely comprehensive.
Michael frowns.
You had the talk with me when I was 10, he protests.
She smiles at him seraphically.
You were an early bloomer, darling, Mother says with an airy wave of her free hand. In any case, it would be a pity for the two of you to go alone when you could go together. The photographs would be charming.
Michael claws at his face.
Are you even hearing this? Michael demands of their father.
Father shrugs expressively.
Mother pats Castile on the hand.
You should see if he's still going, she advises.
Michael pantomimes slitting his wrist with a dinner knife as Castile asks to be excused.
He turns on the lights in his room and pulls open the curtains to see Dean lying in bed,
tossing a baseball into the air over and over again. He raps loudly on his own window, and Dean's head appears, tousled and with a smile. "What's up?" Dean scribbles. Castile digs out his notepad. "Do you think you'll still go to prom tomorrow?" Dean blinks, but shrugs. "Nah, I told you I hate dances. Really not my scene." Dean holds up a finger while he writes something else. "Are you?" Castile forces a smile. "Not my scene," he writes back, and Dean laughs and nods. "Yeah, I'll probably just stay home and watch zombie movies," Dean scribbles. "You should come over." Castile's not sure what it is, but something snaps. Before he knows it, he's blowing past Sam in the Winchester's entryway and opening the door to Dean's room. "You know, when I said you should come over, I didn't necessarily mean right this second," Dean says faintly, still holding his marker and his notepad. Castile takes a deep breath. "You would never have to take me to a dance. I don't like them, and I don't even know how to dance. But I've loved you from the moment you moved in next door, and if you would let me, I would make you happy, I promise," Castile blurts out, and he thinks he's having a heart attack. Dean stares at him for a moment, jaw slack. "But you said this afternoon that it wasn't... You said you didn't like me," Dean sputters. Castile looks to a spot directly to the left of Dean's ear. "It was hypothetical. If I liked someone," Castile says on autopilot. Dean blinks. "I was so angry when you said that, and I didn't even know why," Dean mutters. Castile opens his mouth to say something, but Dean shushes him quickly, uncapping the marker and scribbling something on the paper. "Just shut up and kiss me," is scrawled across the page in black and white. Castile takes a step toward him, but then the enormity of the whole situation comes crashing down around his ears, and he's frozen to the floor. Dean rolls his eyes with a laugh, dropping the paper and standing up. He pulls Castile in by his shoulders. "I can't believe I dug dating advice from you," Dean says. But he's grinning, and Castile knows because he can feel it against his mouth. Castile has thought about what it would be like to kiss Dean for 3 years, and it's nothing compared to kissing him. Nothing at all. Mother is disappointed that they're missing the prom, but is slightly mollified that since Dean isn't getting Castile a boutonniere, he's at least paying for the movie ticket. The end. Everything Comes Naturally, a Short Skirts First sequel. By 20-something, read by X-Man Hater. Dean supposes they're dating. He's not sure because he's never dated a dude, and most of his dating experience involved opening doors and not burping. But he's pretty sure he and Cass are dating, even though most of the stuff they do together is stuff they would have done anyway, watching movies and driving around town aimlessly. Except right now, they're parked in a field 15 minutes outside town, and Cass is making fucking criminal noises underneath him, like no one has ever touched him like this. And a really selfish part of Dean hopes that's true. "Dean," Cass breathes, running a hand under Dean's shirt, and Dean can feel the blunt edges of Cass's nails scraping against his stomach, like he's trying to memorize him by touch. So Dean has to lean down and kiss him, cramped and sticky hot in the back seat of the Impala. Dean's really not sure what the Christ etiquette is in this situation, but he has no idea how to ask Cass to just touch him, somewhere, anywhere, more than the careful light teasing touches over his sides, threading into his hair. It feels like it's 100 degrees in here, even though all the windows are rolled down and there's even a breeze flowing through, because looking down at Cass, whose mouth is red and soft and wet, it feels like he's on fucking fire from wanting. After skipping out on prom, they'd spent most of the movie hidden in the back, making out. When Dean had dropped Cass off that night, Cass biting his lip, shy and unsure but so damn eager, Dean had thought that he was going to hit that hard. He's enough of a red-blooded male that he'd done the only responsible thing possible after getting himself a boyfriend, especially one that had virgin stamped over his face as much as Cass did, and watched a bunch of gay porn on the internet. But Dean doesn't think that any of the super-waxed twinks, uninterestedly blowing each other, prepared him for the reality of Cass sighing into his mouth, grinding into him. "Dean, I want to..." Cass trails off, arching his back as Dean sucks a kiss against his neck. But his intent is pretty clear when his hands trace around to Dean's fly and... holy shit. Cass slips a hot hand beneath Dean's jeans and boxers, and Jesus H. Christ, Cass is touching his dick. "Can I... is this all right?" Cass stammers. Dean almost laughs because he doesn't think any man has ever turned down a handjob, period. But it comes out as this strangled groan as Cass's thumb runs over the head of his cock, slipping on pre-cum. Yes, God, please, he finally manages when Cass stills under him, like he might stop. It seems like that's all the encouragement Cass needs before he tugs open the fly, and Dean is super grateful he chose today to wear button-fly jeans. Because now Cass has a whole range of motion that he's using to do some fucking tremendous things to Dean's dick. Cass moans as Dean shifts his leg between them, inadvertently pressing against the hot line of Cass's erection, and Dean swallows hastily because it's going to be seriously embarrassing if he comes this quickly. Thought about this so much, Cass whispers, but it's loud in the silence, and Dean slams a hand against the frame of the car, because now he can't erase the image of Cass, maybe jerking himself off. Thinking about Dean, so close. Wanted you so badly, wanted to make you come. And Cass says it like it's nothing, but Dean can barely think around the sudden conviction that his brain is going to blow some really important fuses. And he's going to die here, Cass's hand working him so steadily, so perfect. Dean, Cass begs, like it's fucking killing him too. Voice broken and hoarse sounding, and Dean comes, nearly blacking out with how good it is. When he's able to think again, Cass is thoughtfully licking his hand clean of Dean's spunk, like he's so fucking curious, and it makes Dean's prick twitch, hard, painful and too sensitive. He may be 18, but he's not getting it up again that quick, no matter what his brain is telling him. Jesus fucking Christ, Cass, Dean mumbles, kissing him filthy and open, and God, he can taste himself all over Cass's pretty mouth. Cass just fucking gives it up, like he could let Dean lazily tongue-fuck him forever. Would just let him take and take. Dean backs up because he remembers he has to breathe, and Cass's eyes are so blue and wrecked with need. Dean buries his face in Cass's neck because that's almost too much. He pushes Cass's shirt up and cups his hand over Cass's cock, over his stupid seersucker shorts, and Cass gasps like he can't even breathe, mumbling indistinct, sharp sounds. Shh, shh, baby, gonna take care of you, Dean promises, fumbling over the zip. Cass wraps his arms around Dean, hands clawing at his back over his t-shirt as Dean gets Cass's cock free. Dean had been sort of worried about not liking Dick, that he would choke when it came to the big event, but now, with Cass shaking under him, he can't help but curiously stroke Cass's penis, wondering at how it's the same and totally different than touching himself. And watching Cass biting at his own lip like even this is going to break him. How the careful spread of Dean's hand makes pearly drops of cum gather at the tip of Cass's cock. Makes Dean hyper-aware that he's hard again. It makes him think that they're going to do this again. A lot, because this is pretty much the best thing ever. Cass getting reedy and soft-sounding little ahs and tiny hitching breaths that are so good for him, that make Dean ache and want all over again. Dean, I need you, Cass cries, his arms clutching at Dean's shoulders. Dean kisses the sharp curve of Cass's collarbone, biting a kiss there that makes Cass jerk his hips into Dean's hand. Whatever you want, Cass. Anything, Dean says, because he'd do some mercilessly kinky shit for Cass, to be the only one who hears him come apart like this. Cass's fingers twitch as Dean breaks out some of his all-star whacking off moves, and he's glad that they seem to work for Cass, too. Cass's head thumps back hard against the door. Talk. Tell me, Cass tries, and shit, it figures Cass likes dirty talk. I want to know. Dean smirks. What, you want to know that this gets me hot, watching you under me, wanting it so bad? Dean asks. And yeah, that's what he likes. Cass's eyes practically roll back into his head. Finding out that you like it messy like this, out here where someone could find us? Watch me touch your pretty cock, touch all of you? Yeah, I like it. Cass is heaving these shallow, whimpering breaths in, and fuck, he really does get off on this. I love it, baby. I nearly blew again just watching you lick my cum off of your hand. Sometime I'm gonna make you do yourself like this. Just watch you touch yourself for me. I'm gonna go fucking wild, Dean says, bewildered by the insane shit that's coming out of his mouth. But Cass is thrashing under him, falling apart with just Dean's hand and voice, and it's hot. It's fucking scorching. Dean, 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 Cass chants, like he's losing his mind, and Dean kisses him hard. Come on, babe, do it. Fucking come all over my hand. I want to taste you, too. Dean mutters right into Cass's ear, and the hell of it is, he does. It's all true. Cass keens, like Dean's killing him, and comes, hot and wet all over Dean's hand, still tight on Cass's dick. Oh, Oh, Cass breathes, eyes closed, trembling and shaking still, pulling Dean weakly against him. True to his word, Dean tentatively licks his hand. It's salty and warm, but not offensive tasting or anything. It's probably nicer than wiping it on something, so Dean quickly licks his whole hand clean. As soon as he's done, he realizes Cass is staring at him like he's seen the face of God or something. Dean can feel his cheeks turning bright fucking red, but Cass just tackles Dean back like he's got to get in there or someone's going to get hurt. Dean abruptly remembers he's still hard when Cass pushes Dean back against the opposite window and crawls down his body and, sweet merciful fuck, wraps his lips around Dean's cock like he's goddamn gonna go to town. Dean is going to last like 30 seconds because holy shit, Cass's mouth is hot and so slick and Cass is blowing him. He's practically deep-throating him and Dean doesn't even know where he's putting it before he pulls up. Cass is swirling his tongue around the head of Dean's dick, and Dean doesn't even have time to warn him before he's coming. But Cass just swallows it all down, and Dean cannot even handle this shit. Was that... I've never done that before, Cass says after a moment, blushing faintly pink like he just baked a pie or some shit, not suck Dean off like a fucking pro. Dean is still gasping for air because his brain is leaking out his goddamn ears. Yeah, Cass, Christ, he finally manages, pulling Cass close enough to touch, running his hands through Cass's dark, messy hair. Cass just hums easily against Dean's mouth, pressing little chaste, closed-mouthed kisses against Dean's lips. I wanted to make it good for you, Cass says quietly. And Dean can't help the laugh that bubbles out of his chest. Cass, of course it was good. It was great, Dean assures him, because Dean realizes that he more or less just took Cass's virginity in the back seat of his car, and maybe he needs to hear stuff like that. Cass smiles, soft and pleased. I'm glad, he murmurs, tucking his head under Dean's chin. The back seat is way too small for this, and they're going to have to get up and untangle all of their sweaty body parts sometime soon. But right now, Dean is happy to stay as he is.
The End.
Gotta Be From Out of Town, a Short Skirts Verse sequel. By 20-something, read by X-Men Hater. Dean wishes he could say this was the first time he's come home to find Cass moaning, splayed out on his giant white bed, 3 fingers up his ass, stretching to find the perfect angle to brush against his prostate. But that would be such a lie. Unfortunately, he also still has the same response as the first time and every time thereafter, which is to say he drops his bag and is instantly painfully hard. Baby, you couldn't wait 20 minutes? Dean asks, already stripping his shirt off, reaching for his fly. Cass's eyelids flutter. Dean, I missed you, Cass says, arching his back, practically purring. And if Dean didn't know better, from extensive experience, he'd think Cass was faking this level of enthusiasm, but it's all real. Kept thinking about you finally getting here. Wanted you to be able to fuck me right away, Dean. Dean is, at last, naked, and it's been 3 weeks for him, too, away games and exams keeping either of them from making it to each other, until Dean had finally said fuck it and came down for just Sunday night. Still, Dean says, because it's one thing to hear it over the phone or know it's going on somewhere without him, although Cass usually does call him when he's masturbating, but he feels sort of robbed. Cass just chuckles, low and dirty. You can do it later, too, Cass whispers, pulling Dean against him to kiss. Feel how you opened me up. See how slick I am? Feel your cum inside me? Dean wonders who the fuck taught Cass to talk like this, but it works. Dean's hands stutter where they're pressed against Cass's sides, and he smiles, filthy and pleased against Dean's mouth. But right now, all I want is for you to slam me up against this headboard again and again, Cass tells him, lube slick fingers wrapping around Dean's cock. Fuck me into the mattress, Dean. I want to feel you all week. Jesus Christ. You're going to kill me someday, Cass, Dean says, but the complaint is muffled against Cass's neck. Cass smiles, all bright and cheerful, unrepentant. Dean, please fuck me so hard I can't walk normally tomorrow. I would really appreciate that, Cass says, looking so damn earnest, and Dean groans. Killing me, Dean moans. Cass hums, pleased, as he guides Dean's cock into his ass, which, despite the fact that Cass has been laying around fingering himself for God knows how long, he's tight and hot, and Dean is dying slowly, because Cass is clutching at his hips and dragging him in inch by inch. I really regret letting you sign up for a gym, Dean slurs weakly as Cass just pulls Dean up against him, buried to the hilt. Castile looks triumphant, but he's breathing hard, eyes lidded and heavy. Move, please, Cass says, but he's deadly serious. If Dean doesn't start fucking him, and fast, Cass is just going to torture him for hours. Well, Cass is probably going to do that anyway, but Dean really would be lying if he said he didn't sort of like it. Pushy, aren't you? Dean teases, but he pushes himself up on his hands and pulls almost all the way out before slamming back in as hard as he can. Because, in the end, Dean always caves, and Cass always makes it worth his while. Cass makes this drunkenly happy noise that Dean loves. God, Dean, harder. Cass tries to push back, but Dean just laughs. It sounds dark and slutty, even to him, and Cass writhes, arching his back a little as Dean moves his hands to bring Cass's hips up. I guess it's good that I managed to stay taller than you, Dean observes idly, as he pulls Cass's legs up and around his waist, getting to his knees. I can just put you where I want you. You might want to hand me a pillow. I think your legs are going to give out when I'm done with you, baby. Dean, Cass whines, but Dean just draws his cock out until Cass finally gives in, 2 inches left, and passes him one of the huge fluffy pillows he keeps all over the bed. Dean just slides it into place and presses an amused kiss to the soft, sweet skin where Cass's hips meet his thigh, biting softly and listening to Cass cry out above him. What, you don't want to make this easy on me? I had a rough week, you know, Dean says. 3 years later, Dean is still amazed at how this gets to Cass, because Dean doesn't know anyone else, as monogamous as Cass, who loves being told they're a filthy cum slut. Don't you want to make it so easy for my dick to fuck you open? Leave you aching tomorrow, sitting in class, feeling where I kept slamming into your sweet ass? Dean punctuates this with 3 sharp thrusts of his hips, putting himself balls deep, listening to the familiar dirty slap of skin against skin. Yes, Cass hisses, wrapping his hands around the slats of the headboard, bracing himself. Dean, I want you so bad. I want you. Dean leans over and kisses Cass until his mouth is just this hot, wet mess, red and abused-looking. Satisfied, Dean moves back to just fuck into Cass, thanking God that baseball keeps him in such good shape. Cass gasps and sighs and fucking mules, this whole symphony of noise that drives Dean fucking crazy, his hips snapping against Cass's pale thighs. Baby, I don't think I'm going to touch your cock. I think I'm just going to let you come, thinking about how I'm filling you up, listening to me talk about how much I fucking love this, how I couldn't go one more fucking day without it. I had to drive down here and screw you, stupid. Dean lets the words fall out of his mouth. He stopped thinking about what he was saying a long time ago, and learn to run with it. And he'll keep doing it as long as it makes Cass come like he's gonna die, like he wants Dean so much. Anytime, Dean. Want you all the time, Cass sobs, clutching harder and harder against the headboard. Dean runs his hands all over Cass, feeling where his ribs expand and contract when he draws in huge, hitching breaths. The fine trail of hair above his dick, the tender, delicate skin at the base of his cock. Dean grins because Cass is bucking his hips wildly, fucking into the air. So Dean grabs his hips and pulls him in just as he goes all in, and Cass just bottoms out in one fucking delicious boneless slide. You know how often I had to jerk off these 3 weeks? How lonely I was without you, babe? So used to having you at least once a week. The guy said I was fucking intolerable, Dean tells him. He has no idea how much longer he can keep this up. The burn in his thighs feels like the end of a run, and his hands are starting to slip in the sweat all over Cass's skinny hips, beating and pooling in the humid night heat. Cass is just babbling, and Dean can make out his name and God and yes, but that's about it, as Cass scrabbles against the wall, hands slipping through the slats. You gonna come for me, baby? You like it that much, don't you? Me holding you down, making you take my dick? I think you can do it, Cass. I think you should come right now, Dean murmurs, encouraging Cass as he feels his dick skidding across Cass's prostate. Cass mouths silently as he collapses back, his own cum striping up over his stomach and up his chest. Cass's whole body goes tense for 3 insane, burning seconds, where Dean thinks he's going to lose it himself right then. But Cass just goes limp, hands falling against the pillows loosely. Dean kisses his way across Cass's hip, lazily fucking through the last tremors of Cass's orgasm, loving the way Cass shivers as Dean slips easily in and out, just enjoying himself. I'm gonna hold you to that, you know. That promise you made? Soon as I'm done fucking you, when I'm good and done, when I've come so deep in you, I'm just gonna slip my fingers in there. Since you started without me, Dean whispers, licking a hot trace of cum off Cass's stomach. Cass shudders all over, crying out softly like he can't keep quiet, just thinking about it. Cass struggles to open his eyes, finally managing this slit of bright blue, glancing up over the fucked-out spread of his body. I'll like it, Cass promises, dark and shameless, and that is what makes Dean come, sudden and debilitating. Jesus, Cass, Dean breathes. He feels like he might never move again, but he's going to have to get up. Because no matter how comfortable he is right now, slumped over on Cass's stomach, he's pretty sure his face is lying in some of Cass's cum, and that'd be pretty unpleasant to deal with later. He peels himself off, resting on his elbows, to see Cass watching him, just terribly affectionate and pleased. Thank you, Dean, Cass says sweetly, like Dean changed a light bulb rather than provided athletic and filthy sex. Dean just chuckles and shakes his head, pulling out slowly, loving the way Cass hisses an inhalation as Dean slips out. Not done with you yet, baby, Dean promises, scooting over to lay next to Cass, rolling Cass's hips over, letting Cass's legs fall over his. Cass just stretches into it, lying on his stomach. Cass is a runner by preference, and his lean build and ass show that off nicely as Dean carefully spreads Cass's legs open. I was rough, wasn't I? Dean rubs a thumb gently over Cass's slipped, fucked-out hole. I asked you to, Cass reminds him easily, sighing into a moan. I do like it. Dean bites his lip because, yeah, that's true, and there have been some spectacularly memorable nights in his life because of it. Dean pushes two fingers in, slipping in so easy he can feel his dick stir with interest, which, God, Dean really would die. It was so good, Cass, I practically blacked out, Dean agrees, scissoring his fingers slightly, letting Cass wriggle his hips. He's probably still sensitive, but Cass just pushes back into it. You can put in another finger. I'm not going to break, Cass suggests, with a really terrible nonchalant shrug. Dean just chuckles, gently stroking his fingers inside Cass. Nope, this is my turn, Dean teases, pulling his fingers out slowly. They're slippery, covered in lube and his own cum, and Cass sighs again. Please, Cass asks, wheedling. Dean just snorts, but gives Cass the third finger, his ring finger getting just as coated as the other two as he pushes into Cass, who just goes boneless and limp again, like all he needs for perfect happiness is Dean fingering his ass after fucking him as hard as possible. Which, yeah, it worked out pretty well for Dean, too. Once he's had his fill of watching his fingers slide in and out of Cass smoothly, of Cass humming sleepily in his lap, he reaches down, managing to snag his shirt off the floor. He wipes his hand off, giving Cass's stomach a few lazy swipes before manhandling Cass away from the, frankly embarrassing, huge wet spot. Cass is loose like a liquid, draping himself over Dean's side. You don't pay your cleaning lady enough, Dean mutters as he engages in some serious contortion to get the sheet over them both. I think she's just happy to know I have a nice young man who fulfills my sexual needs, Cass muses, mouth half pressed against Dean's chest. Dean knows he's going to have to get up in about 6 hours and drive to school for his satanic 8 a.m. needed-to-graduate seminar, but he doesn't care. He just flings his arm over Cass and sleeps well for the first time in weeks. The end. Short skirts, short fic, cacophonous miscellany. These are 5 short fics in the short skirts verse. Written by 20-something, read by X-Man Hater. 1. Guess who's coming to dinner? David met Winchester when he came down from Kansas the spring before he started his freshman year. He'd come to see them play Rice in Super Regionals and coincidentally smack them down with the hand of God right after he graduated. He seemed like a nice kid, a little bit of an ass, but hey, David remembers being 18, and, well, if he was as objectively hot as Winchester, he'd be an ass too. He does remember, though, watching Winchester take a call right after the game. He'd done the universal, gotta take this, it's my girlfriend, nod, and spent a few quick moments talking quietly to someone, finishing with, yeah, baby, I miss you too. He'd flipped his phone shut, shrugged, and said, Cass, like that was some sort of explanation. But David had filled in the blanks. She was probably a Midwestern hottie, all long tan limbs and gingham or some shit. David also remembers cursing her name when Winchester had fucking lobbed balls at their faces at 89 miles per hour all fall semester because he was an asshole with blue balls.
David pretty much can't imagine how criminally, insanely hot this girl must be that Winchester hasn't dropped her and gone for any of the chicks freaking hungering for his dick. Although he thinks he has a ray of insight the first time Dean brings the lemon bars into the clubhouse, citing that Cass had made them. But after a semester of Winchester being like the angriest, probably most masturbatory person ever, David nearly cried tears of merciless gay joy when Dean casually mentioned that Cass was transferring to Tulane in the spring. So essentially, he's been praying to God that this means Winchester will actually get laid and stop trying to murder them, but it's still sort of a surprise when he runs over to borrow some notes and Dean's room is clean. Well, not clean, but the laundry is done and Dean's manslet roommate has actually taken down the terrifying squirting poster. "What the shit, man?" David ventures as his opening move. Dean shrugs. "Cass is coming for the season opener," Dean says, shoving some stuff under the bed. David blinks. "Wait, so we finally get to meet the lemon bar cookie genius that is Cass?" David asks, because, holy shit, this is going to be a big fucking deal. Like, at least five of the guys are going to want to get a haircut. David tucks his mask more securely under his arm. He likes to think that he knows Winchester a little better than the rest of the team, just by dint of more hours spent together, and the fact that Winchester's damn fastball practically broke his jerking hand twice. Dean eyeballs him suspiciously, but nods, staring as David practically bolts out of the room. "Dean's hot girlfriend is coming," he announces via immediate team email. Trey does get a haircut. David's not sure what this is a symptom of, because if Dean and Cass have been dating this long, and also since none of them are hotter than Winchester, they don't have a shot at her. But Cass sends regular care packages to the whole team now, and they're all a little bit in love with her. So the locker room on Friday is a little tense with anticipation, and Coach yells at them for being nervous about the game, which is such a joke. None of them are worried about the game. Because, David thinks, they're actually all probably nervous because they want Cass to like them. Winchester sort of keeps glancing behind himself like he thinks he's hallucinating the whole fucking team stalking him back to his dorm. Jerry had actually asked if he should bring flowers, but they're not missing this. And when a sweet, dreamy silver Audi turns a corner and Dean's, like, fucking ears perk up, David feels like he stepped into a movie or something. Okay, maybe not, because the car parks and this tall, skinny, northern pale guy in a button-down and seersucker short steps out, all messy dark hair and giant black-rimmed glasses that give him a studious appearance. And this is totally not Cass. Cass is probably 5'6", blonde, with a great rack. David glances at Dean, who is halfway across the lot, grinning like an idiot, and when the dark-haired guy sees him, he waves and lets Dean come to him. Dean stops a barefoot short and, holy shit, Dean is cheating on Cass with a man! In front of all of them! "Now that ain't right," Jerry mumbles. Trey elbows him sharply. "Don't be a homophobe, Jesus, Jerry," he says, but his heart isn't in it. "It's not that, it's just... cheating on Cass is a sin," Jerry manages finally. Dean is still lazily kissing this guy, casually crowding him up against the car like he's not being homosexually unfaithful in front of the whole team, while his girlfriend is due any moment. Jason stares at Jerry. "Jerry, you fucking moron, that is Cass," Jason says flatly. David blinks. "Wait, what?" he demands. Jason stares at David like stupidity is catching. "Are you fucking serious?" Trey asks, still staring avidly at Winchester, frenching a man who may or may not be Cass. "Well, that would explain a lot," David says, after a long moment of contemplation. He sort of feels like all his hopes and dreams have been broken like so many bats were broken last semester with the force of Dean's sexual frustration. Which, again, would explain a lot, because everyone knows gay guys have lots of sex, so, like, it would be a lot to miss. "I feel like my entire life has been a lie," Jerry mutters. Winchester has finally taken a bare step back, and Cass stares up at him, mouth fucking wrecked and adoring, and this whole train of thought is sort of mercilessly gay. Dean grabs a duffel from the back seat and tugs Cass over toward the door to head inside, which takes them right by the team. "Dean," Cass says, stopping, taking in the multitude of LSU Tigers baseball tees. "Are these your teammates?" Dean looks really fucking resigned. "Christ, unfortunately. They followed me, Cass," Dean mutters, putting the final nail in the coffin of David's vainglorious prayers that it might just be homosexual cheating after all. But the hell of the thing is, faced with Cass's bright smile and cheerful introduction, David still sort of wants Cass to like them.
And whether he's a dude or a lady, Cass still sent a lot of really nice baked goods to them, specifically, even. And David's mama raised him better than to be ungrateful, certainly. Hi, I'm Jason. And of course he leads the brigade, because second basemen aren't to be fucking trusted. But they're all introduced one way or another, and while David still feels like he's in the mother-effing Twilight Zone, Cass is just, well, too goddamn nice to freak out at. Dean finally makes this face after the 10th. No, really, thank you for the lemon bars. Like he's just so embarrassed by them all. Look, I haven't seen him in 2 weeks, so go the fuck away, all of you. I'll see you tomorrow, Winchester says, a hint of his old extreme pissiness in his voice. And, oh god, that probably means they're going to go in there and have sex. Cass's mouth makes this mew of reprimand at Dean, who glances away, ears faintly red. It was nice to finally meet all of you, Cass says, earnest and sincere. And fuck it, David sort of likes him, even though he's not a smoking hot chick. Dean practically drags Cass inside, and the hot second they're gone, Trey whips out his phone. What the hell are you doing? David asks after 10 seconds of frantic typing. Tweeting, Trey admits, and Facebook statusing. Trey's simple, Cass is a dude, gets about 30 comments and varying levels of coherency and about 15 likes from the male members of the GLBTA. Within half an hour, there's a Facebook group called Dean Winchester is Gay and Taken, FML. David doesn't know what's worse, that Winchester is off having probably bendy and athletic gay sex, or that he's thinking about it. He then realizes he's been letting Dean pitch to him all season, and feels kind of dirty and cheap. Lisa texts him an hour later when they're at the bar, drinking. Wait, so he's gay? And David just takes a long, mournful drink of his fifth beer and texts back. Yeah, his BF is cute. He doesn't get a text back for a long moment, but when he does, it just says, make sure Dean knows to sit in with us tomorrow. David thinks about telling Winchester that his man-wife has to go sit with the team girlfriends, and orders another beer. The next morning, David thinks he's maybe dying, but Lisa just snorts at him, throws a Gatorade at his face, and continues gathering her hair up with her purple and gold ribbons. Some of the other guys look pretty rough, too, and David spares a second to thank God their game is against Villanova and they're going to crush them mercilessly anyway. Otherwise, Coach would probably murder their fucking faces off. But fucking Winchester is tearful as shit, which is enough to drive David to drink again, let alone the faint scratches down Dean's back when he strips out of his plain clothes into his uniform, the dark hickeys on his neck. Jerry's still staring at Dean like he's been betrayed. Okay, I'm going to say it because no one else will, Dean, Jason says, clapping a hand on Dean's gay shoulder. We all thought Cass was a girl. Dean furrows his eyebrows. Are you serious? Dean finally asks, obviously combing through past conversations. Well, he's not. Jason laughs. Yeah, we noticed, but hey man, we're all cool with it, Jason adds, like he's daring anyone to disagree. Dean frowns. Okay. Thanks, I guess, Dean says eventually, like, why wouldn't they be okay that their pitcher is suddenly gay? Oh, that's right. Dean, Lisa said to have Cass sit with her, David mumbles. The, with the other girlfriends, left unsaid. But Dean just nods and texts quickly, and David feels like nothing is ever going to be normal again. Sure enough, when they head out there, Cass is ensconced between Lisa and Carrie, looking like just another teen girlfriend, wearing a bright LSU baseball shirt. David cannot handle the world today. And despite the fact that David is like 100% positive Dean got laid last night, his fastball is just as vicious. David stealthily shaking his hand out every once in a while, even with his glove on. In fact, Dean is on, pitching 4 innings without a single hit and stealing third after a triple play, and then knocking out a home run in the fifth. He pitches all through the 7th inning, and the Villanova coach is clearly thinking about a mercy kill of the game because they're up 10-1, even with Chris letting a bunt slip by him after some walks get Nova their only run. Dean is making this face in the dugout, like, what's the point of a relieving pitcher if they suck? Which David actually kind of agrees with, but they can't let Dean pitch the whole game either. Clearly not content with the score, Dean fucking steals third and cruises into home in the top of the 9th when Jason slams a ball back deep into the field, skidding into the plate just under the tag. David sort of thinks he's just showing off for Cass at this point, but a win is a win, and after they shake hands politely, Dean vanishes.
But David's not surprised when he catches a glimpse of them later. Dean's still in his dusty uniform, pressing Cass up against the wall, kissing him like his fucking life depends on it. It sort of makes him uncomfortable, in ways he doesn't really want to analyze, but clearly it makes Dean happy or some shit, so... As long as it stops Dean from throwing rogue pitches at his face during practice and keeps them in lemon bars, it can't be so bad. 2. In sickness and in health. Cass always answers his phone, with the notable exception of when he's in class and he never skips, ever, so... When Dean gets the voicemail for the third time in a row, "This is Castiel Meyer. Please leave your name, number, and any other necessary information after the tone. Thank you for calling." He's understandably concerned. He's done with classes for the week. His two Friday classes have been canceled by the grace of God and an unseasonable bout of flu that's been circling around campus. Dean has just kept on washing his hands and avoided the dining halls and has thus far managed to avoid it, but a couple of guys on the team and a few of his profs have gotten it, and Dean has no desire to join their ranks. He's laying on his bed, debating whether it's clingy and psychotic to just drive down there or if it's just concerned in being a good human, when his phone blares out Taylor Swift, and he really wishes he could figure out how Sam changed Cass's ringtone so he could stop looking like a 14-year-old girl in public. He pushes the accept call button harder than he needs to. "Cass," Dean says, relieved and irritated and pleased. He hears a hacking cough and some ragged wheezing. "Cass?" There's a long pause. "Hello, Dean," Cass finally manages, and it's hoarse and weak, and Dean starts throwing clothes in a bag. "I'm sorry I missed your phone calls. I was... asleep." Dean translates that from Cass' ease, and that probably means he passed out somewhere in his apartment in an illness-induced haze. "What's your temperature?" Dean says insistently. There's a little more wheezing. "I'm fine, Dean, really. It's most likely just a cold," Cass says. Dean rolls his eyes, wedging his phone between his ear and his shoulder so he can use both hands to zip up his duffel. "Get in bed, take 2 aspirin with a whole glass of water. I'll be there in an hour," Dean directs, and he can hear Cass frowning. "Dean, it takes an hour and a half to get to New Orleans, obeying posted speed limits," Cass says flatly. "Yeah, we'll see about that. Seriously, bed," Dean argues, hanging up. He scribbles a note to Ben, just, "Cass sick and Nola, don't fuck on my bunk," as he grabs his keys and heads out the door. He makes it there in 50 minutes, which, beyond involving a lot of illegal speeding, may have actually broken some natural and gravitational laws, too. He's doubly grateful that Cass decided to live in the Garden District, rather than the pokey apartments he'd been looking at in the French Quarter, because there's a comfortable parking space that he pulls into with the tiniest of screeches before he lets himself in with his key. "If you're not in that bed, you're going to be in a world of hurt when you're better," Dean calls as he toes off his boots in the entryway, dropping his bag. He makes his way through the kitchen and living room, seeing no sign of Cass other than a trail of crumpled tissues, and pads up the stairs to the loft. Cass is sound asleep, breathing hazily through his mouth, lips parted gently and just a little chapped. He's nestled in the middle of the huge, snowy linens, arms flung out towards the nightstand, his cell phone still clutched in his hand. Dean is sort of embarrassed by how much he loves Cass, fiercely and for so many reasons he can't even name them all, so he just settles for sitting gently on the edge of the bed, pressing the back of his hand against Cass's hot cheek. "Dean?" Cass asks, foggy and quiet, blinking bloodshot blue eyes. "Hi, baby," Dean says. "You sound terrible. Have you eaten?" Cass frowns, glancing at the clock. "You sped," Cass accuses weakly. Dean grins, pushing back Cass's damp bangs, pressing a quick kiss to his forehead. "Maybe a little. Stay here, I'll be right back," Dean promises, tugging the comforter down to cover Cass's white socked feet. Cass is still giving him the gimlet eye, but he settles back into the pillows, which Dean reads loud and clear as defeated acceptance. He takes the steps 2 at a time, and at least he knows where everything in Cass's kitchen is, he thinks, putting the kettle on and opening the fridge door to rummage for something suitable. Because this is Cass, it's stocked for an army, and Dean actually finds, like, a fucking roast chicken in there and plenty of vegetables. Because Cass is this freak who actually enjoys Sam's summer salads, and Dean has this stupid-ass half-smile on his face as he chops through a crap ton of celery and baby carrots, throwing it all in the pot with the organic chicken broth he finds in the pantry. The kettle is hissing and spitting, so he makes a cup of Cass's shitty dried bark and mulch tea while the soup bubbles away.
He takes a moment to ponder when the fuck he became his mom, but better mom than dad, so he just shrugs and takes the tea upstairs. Cass is woozily sitting up in his bed when Dean makes it back up the stairs, carefully balancing the mug so none of the super sweet, toasty hot liquid spills onto his hand. Cass is sort of blinking around, almost puzzled, looking more or less like those damn kitten videos he loves and watches on repeat while cramming for exams. "Drink this. Slowly, it's hot," Dean says, and the look of dazed affection Cass swings his way is too much for him to handle, so he perches on the edge of the bed and sort of holds the mug as Cass weakly wraps his hands around it and takes a careful sip. "That's just how I like my tea," Cass says wondrously, and Dean chooses to think that it's the fever talking, because if he didn't know how Cass takes his terrible, gross tea, he'd be a pretty shitty boyfriend. "Yeah, I know," Dean replies, because he spent lazy Sunday mornings in Cass's sun-filled kitchen, watching him dump spoonful after spoonful of raw sugar into his tea, clinking his spoon quietly as he reads the paper. Plenty of people think Dean's just a dumb jock, but when it's important, he pays attention. And Cass is important. "I'm making you soup?" Cass blinks. "I didn't know you could cook," Cass says, but he's smiling and pleased-looking, like he's filing that away in that big brain of his, because as much as Dean's been paying attention to what Cass likes, does, wants, Cass has an almost encyclopedic knowledge of Dean that's humbling and gratifying, and a lot of other things Dean doesn't look at too closely. He just accepts. Dean smiles and kisses Cass's temple. "You cook better than I do. But this is an emergency situation," Dean teases, and gets up to throw the egg noodles in the pantry into the soup to finish it off, but Cass catches at his sleeve. "I love you, you know," Cass says, raspy and quiet and honest, and Dean has to bite his lip for a moment. Because he doesn't know how he got here, and Cass has had to take all the big steps in this relationship. Making the first move, transferring to Tulane. But nearly 3 years later, he's getting a grip on how not to let him down. "I do, Cass," Dean manages, and he makes a joke out of almost everything, but he's serious. He knows. "I love you, too." Cass's smile is brilliant, and Dean has to duck his head a little, because he probably looks like a moron, grinning from ear to ear. "Lay down, dork. You're going to make your head explode," Dean says, and goes back down to the kitchen. He throws the noodles in, and then realizes his cell phone is ringing, muffled in his bag. He fishes it out and answers in the nick of time. "Hey, Sammy," Dean says, using his free hand to stir the soup lazily. "What's up?" "Is Cass okay?" Sam asks, concern in his voice. And Sam may be nearly 1,000 miles away, but Dean knows he's making the dweebiest scrunched-up face of woe. "I mean, he has a fever and sounds pretty rough, but..." Dean pauses. "Wait, how the hell did you know Cass is sick?" The silence on the other end is deeply judging. "Dean, it's all over Facebook," Sam says. Dean spares a second to slap a hand over his face. "Christ," Dean mutters. "How?" Sam snorts. "Well, Ben posted that his room was open for, quote, pussy, 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 end quote, because his roommate was off playing Florence Nightingale. There are about 20 comments from the team asking about Cass. I think they're about to call the CDC, Sam answers. And Dean rolls his eyes because he really doesn't know why he still lives with Ben. "Seriously, I don't have words for how much I regret introducing the guys to Cass," Dean says, poking at a noodle, and, deeming the soup finally done, decides he should hang up on Sammy. "Right, I'm going. Hold down the internet for it. Don't let the guys send a sex worker nurse or anything." He ends the call before Sam can complain further about God knows what, because he has more important stuff to do, and he tosses his phone back into the bag. He dishes up 2 big bowls and another big glass of water. He even uses Cass's tragically gay breakfast in bed tray to carry it all up. Cass has managed to put his glasses on and even has his hands wrapped around the mug in his lap. "That smells amazing," he croaks out. Dean smiles. "You're only saying that because you don't have a sense of smell right now," Dean replies easily, settling himself next to Cass, letting Cass lean against him in the headboard, putting the tray across their laps. Cass frowns at him. "Don't belittle the things you do for others. You're extraordinarily kind, Dean," Cass insists. Dean shrugs, putting a spoon in Cass's soup, hiding the flush he knows is creeping up his neck and ears. "Well, it's you, so," Dean says, nudging the bowl toward him. Cass sighs roughly, but smiles as he carefully eats his soup. They're quiet for a while, eating, and it's easy to be around Cass. It always has been.
And by the time that Cass has managed about two-thirds of the bowl and insisted he can't eat any more, they're tired, and so Dean just makes Cass take more cold medicine and puts the tray down as far from the bed as he can manage so he doesn't step on it in the morning. He slips out of his jeans and puts them both under the covers, despite Cass arguing weakly that Dean will get sick, and he really could do the dishes since Dean cooked. Dean just laughs, low and quiet, and uses his limbs to weigh Cass down in bed, until his protests are just hazy murmurs. "Go to bed," Dean orders, tucking his face into the sweet space between Cass's neck and shoulder, dropping a lazy kiss to the fever-warm skin there, just above the edge of Cass's t-shirt. Dean wakes up to sunlight, and Cass snuffling sadly against his chest. He fights down a smile, because there is something seriously adorable about Cass, pink-cheeked and drowsy. But knowing Cass, he's miserable. Cass lives to take care of other people, which makes him an astoundingly awful patient. Dean's debating whether or not he can get up and go to the bathroom without waking Cass up, but the issue is rendered moot when Cass blinks blearily, raising his head up a bit. "Dean," Cass asks quietly, but his voice has lost a lot of the scratchy tone it had had yesterday. "Baby, what do you need?" Dean replies. Cass smiles into Dean's t-shirt. "Nothing. This is just... I miss this," Cass says softly. Dean presses a kiss into Cass's hair. "Me too," Dean says. He lays a hand against Cass's forehead. "It feels like your fever is nearly gone." Cass looks up, staring at Dean beatifically. "I guess you should be the doctor, not me," Cass teases, and Dean rolls his eyes. "So I'm guessing you feel better," Dean says. "Hold on, I'll be right back." He eases out from under Cass, grabbing the glass from the nightstand, filling it up in the bathroom, and passing Cass two aspirin. "Take that." Dean heads back to the bathroom to piss, because, unlike Sam, Cass can actually be trusted to take medicine on his own. Dean used to make Sam show him both hands, open his mouth and under his tongue, like an inmate in a psych ward, because Sam was a wily little kid. After he washes his hands and does a quick brushing of his teeth, Dean leans in the doorframe. "What do you want for breakfast?" Dean asks. Cass pouts, just slightly. "Couldn't we just..." Cass trails off, but the way his fingers are plucking at the covers, Dean gets the gist anyway. He crawls back under the covers and tucks Cass close under his chin. Cass sighs, relaxed and easy, the rattling wheeze from yesterday smoothed over into a faint whispering tone. "You know, I don't delay breakfast for just anyone," Dean mumbles into Cass's hair. But he's already feeling warm and heavy again, so it's not like it's a hardship to just close his eyes as Cass hums his assent into Dean's collarbone. When Dean wakes up again, Cass is sitting up against the headboard, reading with his glasses slipping low on his nose, and screw it, maybe he'll get sick. But he can't help but lean across the bed, pull the book out of Cass's hands, and kiss him, long and slow and simple. Cass makes a muffled noise of surprise against Dean's mouth, and Dean is half prepared for Cass to lean back and say something about germs or morning breath. But instead, he just palms his suddenly empty hands against Dean's chest, fingers catching in Dean's old Zeppelin t-shirt. Dean smiles and kisses Cass again, twice, three times. Soft, almost chaste, like when they'd been teenagers and trying to figure each other out in the back seat of the Impala all summer. "Good morning," Dean finally says, leaning his forehead against Cass's. Cass smiles. "Good afternoon," he corrects gently. "We seem to have slept through the morning." Dean snorts. "Yeah, and whose fault was that?" he kids, but just brushes a thumb over Cass's cheekbone, finding Cass fever-free and just warm and nice to lay in bed with. I will make that up to you," Cass promises. "If you put on some pants, we can go to Commander's Palace for lunch." Dean smiles because Cass's attempts to bribe him into dressing better with truly amazing pork will never stop. "Really, pants were not in my plan at all today," Dean admits. Because he really doesn't want anything more than to make cold-cut sandwiches and neck with Cass in the kitchen, and, well, that's probably not on the menu at Commander's Palace. Although Dean is totally holding Cass to that some other time. Cass smiles, and he must be feeling better because that's the smile that means Dean is getting laid. 3. Proud to swim home. Cass is taken to Louisiana like a duck to water. His bizarre... Christ, genteel manners have been right at home with the seersucker-shorted sons of the South, and his easy way that bespoke old money suited them just fine. Dean likes any place that's full of good food, good people, and a cheerful irreverence, and that's in no short supply here. That being said, Cass has always been a little crazy when it came to the environment. Cass took Dean to see Oceans twice, and Dean sort of thinks that Cass bought a Blu-ray player just so he could watch David Attenborough talk sedately about planet Earth on his ridiculous huge TV. Which is why Dean is in no way surprised when he opens the door to Cass's 1.5-story historic former carriage house in the Garden District, and Cass is having an argument with someone about the oil spill. Dean's not sure if Cass is on the phone with his parents or Al Gore, although Al's a little busy these days, when he says, "The repercussions of this are going to be felt not just for the next 3 months, not even for the next 3 years. Unfortunately, human interest alone isn't going to allow for fast enough action. What's needed here is capital." Cass frowns, but leans forward to kiss Dean briefly. "Father, I understand your hesitation, but I don't think that BP will be allowed to dodge culpability," Cass insists. "Because the people this fund would be benefiting are the people least likely to see a dime of the money they're owed in any scenario." Cass sighs. "All right, we'll continue this conversation later. Dean just got here, and I don't want to be rude." Dean rolls his eyes, starting to make a gesture that means, "Go on with your conversation," but Cass hangs up the phone anyway with a quick goodbye. "I'm sorry, Dean," Cass says, dropping the phone on the couch so he can slide forward and greet Dean properly with a long, lingering kiss. That was important, baby. You didn't have to hang up on your dad for me," Dean replies easily. "Because seriously, only with the Myers would 'I'm neglecting a guest' fly as a reason to end a call." Cass shakes his head. "He'll need to sleep on it anyway," Cass demurs, and the only good part about them living over an hour away from each other is that Cass can't keep his hands off Dean when they are together. Which, granted, is nearly every weekend, but it's still nice. Well, except when he comes back with interesting bruises and the guys stare inappropriately in the shower. But those bastards are basically just weird, creepy horn dogs. Like, he's not complaining about the bruises, don't get him wrong, but there's a really short list of dudes he likes staring at him in the shower. Short as in the room with him. Cass scrapes his teeth over the edge of Dean's jaw, carefully. "You're not paying attention," Cass says, a hint of a pout in his voice. And Dean figures, screw it. Cass always treats dinner reservations as a suggestion anyway, so Dean drags Cass, laughing, all the way upstairs, and well, maybe he'll have time to fuck Cass into the mattress and still make 8 p.m. call. They're 5 minutes late, but Cass wrestled Dean into a tie, or more like Cass had promised they would use the tie for other things later if Dean wore it now, and Cass's sweet smile still greases wheels. Of course, Dean flushes like a moron when Cass just shifts in his chair, looking smug and well-fucked. And Dean's obvious embarrassment only makes Cass smile more. "Okay, you need to stop that before the waiter gets here," Dean insists under his breath. Cass just blinks, innocent-looking and totally devious. "I'm just getting comfortable," Cass says, and Dean isn't really sure how he ever thought Cass was naive. But suddenly Dean has a whole separate set of problems beyond Cass passive-aggressively claiming Dean as his turf. Because the woman at the next table loudly proclaims that there's no way she's eating seafood, it's all poisoned now. Dean's face inevitably is reading, "Shit's about to go down," because Cass shuts his mouth abruptly, even though he's clearly dying to turn around and tell her Louisiana's fishermen and women still have 400-some miles of coastline to Texas, completely unscathed. Instead, when the waitress appears at that terrible, fateful moment, Cass just equally loudly declares that he's going to do his part to support the Gulf Coast fishing industry in a time of hardship, especially since he's certain Gino would never allow anything to compromise the quality of the experience at Luke's, let alone serve contaminated food. Cass then proceeds to order every menu item with seafood in it, and Dean just smiles weakly at the waitress as she stares between the two of them, with this combination of amusement, horror, and sheer terrible gratitude all over her face. Dean just tells her to bring some extra plates. They'll share. Dean thinks that every member of the waitstaff comes by at some point during their meal, although that might just be because Cass ordered everything. But it's all fresh and delicious, and Dean has never been told he's not an eater's eater, so he just takes another bite of amazing buttery redfish and commits himself to running 5 miles tomorrow morning rather than 3. Gino comes by with a bottle of wine on the house, which, A, neither of them are 21, and B, how ridiculous is it that he knows the general manager of the restaurant by name? Normally, this is where Cass would sort of frown, because drinking a beer with the team at a party in LSU is one thing. But Cass just pours them 2 glasses, and Dean grins, because his crazy, weird, hot boyfriend is on some sort of environmentally motivated power trip. And hey, more of that power to him. Of course, when he heads out, weighed down with maybe 7 to-go boxes and a handsy, drunk Cass, Dean is sort of regretting that decision. Due to some kind of miracle, Dean manages to stop Cass from trying to give him roadhead on the 19 blocks back to Cass's place, and keeps him just beyond undressing range while Dean stuffs it all into the fridge. Since Cass made such a goddamn scene about eating it, Dean thinks letting it go bad on the counter would be a shame. And then, because he's a gracious kind of guy, he lets Cass go to town on him. Dean wakes up the next morning to smell a seafood frittata cooking. Ugh, since when did he know words like frittata and strong coffee brewing? And Cass thanking someone over the phone, probably his father for donating God knows how much money to save local fishers and sea turtles. He just shakes his head and thinks they probably should eat out in the garden. 4. 1 month. Dean has never actually managed to withhold sex from Cass. Even the week during freshman year winter break after Cass had told him he was transferring out of Chicago and coming to Tulane, when Dean was furious with the idea of Cass compromising his future for Dean, they'd had angry, awesome sex in Cass's room while everyone was out of the Myers house. Finally, Cass had just pointed out that Dean would have done the same thing for him, and Dean had been forced to concede the point, because there were brochures for Northwestern and Valpo in his desk drawer. But he had tried, for about a day. Which is why, stripping off his stupid tie, throwing it toward Cass's closet, Dean doesn't even consider that they won't have sex tonight. But it will be on Dean's terms, and they'll have to have a fight first. "Dean," Cass says quietly, placating. Dean wheels around. "Were you even going to tell me, Cass? Or just surprise me when you didn't go to school next year?" Dean demands. Cass sighs. "It's a deferral, Dean. I can do research for a year. It'll be good to have experience," Cass tries, and Dean shakes his head. It's sweltering, even for New Orleans, and Dean takes off his jacket too, tossing it to the ground. "What were you thinking? How many schools have you heard back from?" Dean pushes. Cass averts his eyes. "All of them. But it's just until June, Dean," Cass insists, coming close enough to touch to trace his hands over the damp white fabric of Dean's Oxford. "Cass, I might not get drafted," Dean says, sitting down on the bed heavily. "Did you even consider that? I might be going from team to team for years, if I even make it. You can't wait for me like this, not again." Cass looks pissed. "Dean, you have an extraordinary talent. You're going to be drafted. And when you know where you'll be, so will I," Cass argues, stubborn, getting right up in Dean's face, and Dean has to kiss him. "I'm not letting you leave me behind," Cass growls against Dean's mouth, and, oh, Christ. Dean pulls back, holds Cass firmly at an arm's distance. "Is that what this is about?" Dean asks. Judging by the stubborn way Cass's eyes refuse to meet his face, yeah, it is. "Cass, you dumb fucking bastard," Dean pulls Cass as close as he can, crushing their mouths together. "I don't want to break up," Cass says harshly into Dean's mouth, winding his arms around Dean's shoulders, and Dean just shakes his head. "Baby, that's not... God." Dean leans back, just far enough that he can focus on Cass's face. "Look at me. Hey, Cass." Cass looks terrified. Jesus fucking Christ. "Don't you..." Dean tries, and he chokes a little on it because he can't even believe he has to say it. "Don't you know you're it? I'm never gonna love anybody else, Cass. Not anyone but you. Can't fucking believe you're making me say this." Cass is shaking against him, breath catching on every inhale as he presses frantic kisses to Dean's mouth. Cass presses his face into Dean's neck. "I'm just so tired of not being with you. I can wait for everything else, but I want to be where you are, Dean." Dean shakes his head. "Just because you might go to med school, somewhere good, while I'm in the minor leagues, doesn't mean we would break up. Christ almighty, Cass," Dean mumbles into Cass's hair. "Stop talking yourself down," Cass grumbles, the sound vibrating against Dean's collarbone. "You're going to get drafted. Just don't let the Red Sox pick you. I don't really want to go to Harvard." Dean laughs, startled and amused. "Cass," Dean says, hesitantly, but Cass just shakes his head. "Another month, Dean. Just another month," Cass pleads. Dean rolls his eyes, thinking about the calendar in the kitchen that's counting down to the first-year player draft. And that Cass even knows what that is, that Cass thinks, well, Dean just sighs. "God damn it, Cass," Dean complains, but Cass can hear the resignation in it because he just kisses Dean, carefully licking his way into Dean's mouth. And they've reached the end of the verbal argument, and now it's time for the argument sex. I'm sorry I didn't tell you, Cass finally says, and this is the problem with argument sex. Dean's pretty much inclined to forgive Cass anything with his mouth pink and slick, just slightly open like that. Dean tries to frown, but Cass looks mussed and upset, and so Dean just sighs and nods, already reaching for Cass's Tulane blue tie. Next time, can we talk about this shit? Rather than, I don't know, hiding your acceptance letters under the bed? Dean requests, and Cass just blinks sweetly. They're in the cereal box, actually, Cass demurs, and Dean has to laugh, because, okay, yeah, Cass knows him pretty damn well. The last place Dean was going to be looking is in Cass's damn Organo Crunch cereal. Cass, shut up, Dean says, fond and so totally fucking whipped. He quickly runs down the line of buttons, tugging Cass's crisp white shirt out from its perfect tucks into his slacks. He throws it over the side of the bed, the thin t-shirt following it. God, how many layers can you wear? It's just so I can watch you peel me out of them, Cass admits, lifting his hips so Dean can finish with his fly and slip his pants and boxers off in one swift move. But I really object that I'm naked and you're fully clothed. Dean snorts, but Cass is like a fucking wizard. Dean is naked too before he can even attempt the stupid cufflinks Cass had made him wear. I think it's because you're a tease, Dean argues, catching Cass around the hips, pushing him up the bed, feeling the sheets and the comforter bunch and slide under Cass. Cass hooks an arm around Dean's neck, pulling him down to press against Cass, all hot sweat and skin on skin, and bites at Dean's mouth, wet little kisses all over his jaw. It's only a tease if it gets you hot, Cass says, using his other hand to palm at Dean's dick. Stop stealing from the breakfast club, Dean groans, trying to ignore how good it feels. Because if you let Cass get the upper hand in argument sex, it's not argument sex at all. It's just their usual mind-melting, brain-breaking, filthy sex. And Dean can't punish Cass with that. Dean scrabbles with the hand not holding himself up, reaching into the open nightstand drawer for the lube. When he finally manages to get a hold of it, he slides down Cass's fever-hot body, using his arm to pin Cass's hips down, even as Cass makes an irritated little whine. Dean, Cass protests. Dean grins, looking quickly over Cass's leaking slit, hearing Cass slam a hand against the bedspread. He slicks up both hands, gripping tightly around the base of Cass's cock, taking just the head of his dick into his mouth, sucking hard as he jacks Cass quickly. Baby, Dean says, letting the obscene pop of his mouth pulling off of Cass's dick do most of the talking for him. If you really didn't like it, you wouldn't let me do it. Cass whines something indistinct as Dean takes the opportunity to stroke the soft skin behind his balls, rubbing fingers against Cass's hole, getting it slick, playing with him. Cass raises his head for a moment to glare at him weakly, but he flops bonelessly against the pillows again as Dean slips a single finger into him, just to the first knuckle. I know what you're doing. We had sex last night. You don't need to be so... Ah! Cass breaks off into a gasp as Dean takes Cass's whole cock into his mouth in one smooth, extremely practiced slide. Dean chuckles around him because he'll never get tired of hearing Cass moan and sigh under him, the restless, pleased noises he can't smother. The thick, salty weight and heat of Cass against his tongue is familiar and welcome, makes Dean think about that first summer after high school when Cass taught him to give a blowjob, hours of fooling around anywhere and whenever they could get each other alone, completely unable to keep their fucking hands off of each other. Dean, Dean, please, Cass begs, and Dean swirls his tongue around the head of Cass's cock, eases up so he can press it flat up against the sensitive underside of his dick, tracing along the vein. Just more, please. Dean bobs down two more times, pausing to lick across the head again to gather up the traces of pre-cum seeping out, swallowing hard. Cass heaves a sigh as Dean finally slips in another finger, and Dean can tell the second he finds Cass's prostate, because Cass lets out a long, low, fervent, fuck. Cass only swears when they're having sex, and it's sort of a turn-on. Okay, Cass's filthy goddamn mouth is a huge turn-on, so it's a compliment. Cass staring glassy-eyed at the ceiling, breathing hard as Dean just strokes Cass's cock in unison with the soft press of his fingers inside him. You think you want to come yet? Dean asks him, jacking Cass fast. Cass makes this little choked noise, and Dean suddenly has cum all over his hand and even on the underside of his chin. So good, baby, so good. Cass just whimpers and twitches his way into post-orgasm compliance. Maybe we should fight more often, Cass mumbles, slurring over his words like he's drunk. Dean just rolls his eyes, carefully adding another finger, slowly stretching Cass, brushing the pad of his middle finger against Cass's prostate.
Or maybe you should just let me do what I want, Dean suggests.
Cass laughs, bright and relaxed.
Dean, it's not my fault if I need you so bad. I get lonely over the week, you know. Sometimes I just like a little reminder of what we did.
Cass chirps, like he's talking about keepsakes, not hard, fast fucking.
Dean just gives him the stink eye and scissors his fingers even slower.
I really don't think I would be like this with anyone else, Dean. No one else could make me feel like...
oh fuck, like I can't get enough, Cass whispers,
even as Dean uses his forearm to keep Cass's hips still, keep him from arching into it.
Plus, I like knowing you can. You can just push me down on the bed and fuck into me, make me take it.
Is that wrong?
Dean frowns.
Don't... You know I know what you're doing, don't you? Dean asks, because Cass is driving him fucking insane.
You won the argument. That means I get to take my time and fucking do you slow.
Cass shrugs, loose and liquid under him.
Dean, I'm just sharing, Cass says. And if Dean didn't know him so well, he'd never be able to tell that the hint of reproach in his voice is so Cass doesn't fucking laugh.
I'm just being honest about how you make me feel. How you always make me feel.
Cass runs his hand over his stomach, lightly teasing his nibble.
If you can't resist fucking me so hard I can't sit, well, Cass says, followed by a measured shrug. And Dean just laughs, sliding up Cass's body to kiss him, wet and thorough, lazily exploring his mouth like it's the first time, savoring it.
Baby, you are so totally obvious, Dean shoots back, gently biting at the shape of Cass's pout.
What? I'm not.
Cass breaks off into a low moan as Dean slowly guides his dick into Cass's ass.
Yeah, sure, Dean says, but it comes out this breathy pant as he struggles to keep his shit together, in light of the way Cass clenches tight, deliberate around him.
Cass practically purrs against him as Dean's hips snap forward reflexively.
Cheating, Dean grits out.
Cass smiles, smug and goddamn sneaky, as he takes advantage of Dean's distraction to pull them flush together.
Dean can't focus. There's suddenly miles and miles of hot skin, slick and responsive under him.
Can you blame me for wanting just a little bit more? Cass says, grinding filthy and so good against him.
Dean bites the tender crook of his neck, the soft patch of skin above his shoulder.
Cass's whole body freezes for a second, because Cass might know Dean's body, what spots make him craziest, what to say to make Dean so fucking blind with want. But Dean knows him, too. So Dean just chuckles and lets his body weigh Cass down so he can just set a slow, rolling pace that makes Cass squirm fruitlessly under him.
Dean, Cass whines, and Dean can feel where he's half hard again, trapped between their bodies.
Please, I need...
And that's definitely not fair, because it's one thing for Cass to whisper filthy nothings into the air. It's a totally separate and harder thing to hear that want, the desperation in Cass's voice, even though he's come once already.
Baby, we're gonna get there, but I will take my time with you, so slow that when I do let you come...
It's gonna feel so good, Cass, so good, Dean promises, breathing hot against Cass's collarbone.
Cass is breathing so fast, shallow, that it almost sounds like sobs.
God, Dean, I... Cass gasps, and Dean just kisses him again, letting Cass steal his air, breaking apart the wild beating of Cass's heart.
Shh, baby, I've got you. Not gonna let you go, Dean swears, pressing their foreheads together, blinking away the salt-sharp sting of sweat.
The pace is torturously slow for him, too, on that knife edge between so good it hurts and hurts because it's so good, and the room is almost oppressive in its heat and silence. The only sounds in the room are the woofing slice of the fan and the wrecked mess of their breathing, arrhythmic and shuddering. He can feel himself losing it, the smooth glide of his hips going shaky and uncontrolled until he gives in, buries himself in Cass and comes and comes.
Dean feels Cass's sharp inhale and clutch of his orgasm in addition to the slick heat buried between them.
I told you, right? So, so good, Cass, Dean says, his voice hoarse and a total mess, tight with way too much shit he can't name.
And he just runs his hands over Cass's face, brushing back the wet, loose, dark curls stuck to Cass's forehead.
Cass just pulls in these tiny, fucked breaths, nodding weakly.
Yes, Dean, he agrees finally, pushing his cheek into Dean's palm.
Yes, of course.
Dean thinks he can't move, now or maybe ever again,
but he makes himself get up, pulling out of Cass as carefully as he can. He comes back with a towel, damp and cool, wiping them both clean. And it's way too hot for this shit, but he lets Cass pull him close, grip him tight against him, bury his face in Dean's neck. "A month, Cass," Dean reminds him, even though he's about to pass out. Cass hums sleepy agreement against Dean's skin. "A month." 5. Empire State of Mind. The night of the draft is a goddamn hot mess. Dean doesn't really remember any of it except Cass blowing him in the bathroom maybe 15 minutes before Joe Girardi had sat down next to him, looked at him for about 20 seconds, and asked, "Son, do you want to be a Yankee?" Dean had felt sort of baffled, but he'd nodded and grinned, and he'd shook hands with Joe and kissed Cass, and he'd been a pitcher for a Major League Baseball team. Cass had accepted his offer from Columbia with a cheery smile, and settled into finding them an appropriately snooty apartment building on the Upper East Side and, like, nesting, with terrible trips to Home Depot, and increasingly horrifying deliveries, brought up by the beleaguered doorman and the service elevator from the Pottery Barn. It doesn't really hit him that he's a part of it now, part of Ruth and Manti and DiMaggio, until Cece elbows him in the side and tells him to freaking smile, kid. He goes and hides in the bathroom for 3 minutes, breathing sickly between his knees, totally convinced he's going to fuck up everything. And because Cass loves him, crazily, insanely, always, and won't get it, he hits speed dial 1 instead of 2 and calls Sam. "Please tell me you're not throwing up, Dean. I can hear your heavy breathing against tile," Sam opens with, and Dean barks out a frantic laugh. "Seriously, you don't need an eating disorder." "Just freaking out. How's your day going, Sammy?" Dean listens to the careful pause before Sam cheerfully blathers on about how awesome Stanford is and how he can't wait for them to play Oakland so he can take all of his friends to the super shitty nosebleeds and point. Dean shakes his head. "Thanks, Sam." And because he's been having a totally preteen spaz fest in the bathroom, he hangs up on his brother and ignores the shaking of his hands and goes out to the bullpen and focuses on throwing as hard and as fast as he can, the count steadily heading up as he starts breathing again. 91, 94. That being said, most of his zen disappears as he steps out, and Andy fucking Petit is leaning there, watching him. "You went to LSU, right? I'm from Baton Rouge, you know," Petit says, quietly, as he sort of shepherds him toward the clubhouse. Andy sits on him, sort of mothering, just the two of them talking in an out-of-the-way corner, until Dean feels like maybe he can do this. If nothing else, he feels like he can fake it, at least long enough to get home and let Cass put him back together again. Dean's the baby of the team. He knows it in the way they trade between tiptoeing around him and jocularly poking at him. Dean heads home, exhausted, a little freaked still, even though Boone and Ivan had made fun of Alex. Christ, A-Rod! Until he cracked a smile. He's only collapsed in the freakishly comfortable armchair in Cass's study for a few moments before he feels the press of lips to his temple. "You look like you had a rough day," Cass says, soft and thoughtful. "I'm just realizing how wildly underqualified I am for my life. That's all, baby," Dean promises. Cass's frown is tucked against Dean's neck. "You're perfectly qualified. Come to bed," Cass says. And even though Dean doesn't feel like he could get it up under direct order from God, he follows Cass into the bedroom meekly enough. Cass strips him efficiently but gently, pushing him face down on the bed. Dean can hear the whispering of fabric and feels the firm muscle of Cass's thighs straddling his back, and a quiet snicking noise that's not the lube bottle. "Oh, thank you, Jesus," Dean mutters as he feels the slick warm heels of Cass's palms press and glide against his back. "It's just Castiel," Cass demurs, teasing and ridiculous and way too good to him. "Ha, ha, oh," Dean's voice hitches as Cass pushes the tension out of his body. "I owe you one, babe." Cass hums his disagreement. "I think this one is on the house," Cass says, lulling Dean into sleepy acquiescence. The last thing Dean thinks before he falls asleep, between one smooth caress and the next, is that he's going to earn this. The End. This time, baby. A short skirts verse timestamp. Summary. He doesn't have anywhere to be today, because yesterday they won the World Series. Dean's forgotten what it's like to wake up in his own bed. Or at least, that's what it feels like when he blinks his eyes open in their huge, pale blue bed, Cass's hand pressed between Dean's chest and his own shoulder, with the slow realization that he doesn't have anywhere to be today. He doesn't have anywhere to be today, because yesterday they won the World Series. Joe had kicked them out of the locker room, drunk and happy, and told them to fuck off and fuck someone, and he'd see them for press shit and everything else on Monday, and no sooner, because he'd forgotten what his children looked like. Dean feels Cass press a kiss against his temple. "Go back to bed. It's still too early," Cass mutters, his sleep-rough voice a little hoarse. But that could be all the shouting and enthusiastic drunk blowjobs last night, so... Dean goes back to sleep. When he wakes up again, the bed is cold on Cass's side, and he can smell coffee wafting in from the kitchen. So he throws on the first pair of boxers he can find and pads in, rubbing his hands over his face in extreme stubble. "Babe," Dean calls, finding the kitchen empty, pouring himself a cup of coffee. "In here," Cass replies, voice echoing from somewhere. Dean frowns. "Where?" he asks, sipping at his coffee. "The bathroom," Cass answers, and Dean frowns, but carries himself and the coffee back through the bedroom and into their ridiculous bathroom. "Oh," Dean says faintly, putting the mug down weakly on the counter. Cass agrees, slicking his hand over his stomach. It's not like when Cass had shown him the apartment for the first time, shyly, like Dean might not like it. Dean hadn't thought about how the jacuzzi bathtub was perfect for slippery, indulgent sex. And it's not like they haven't taken advantage of it many, many times. But there's something about the flush over Cass's chest, the way the steam makes the ends of Cass's hair curl and stick to his skin, and Dean is overdressed. "I was planning on letting you fuck me until our fingers got pruny, but I don't know, he took a little longer to wake up than I thought," Cass teases, letting his eyelashes flutter in pleasure as he stretches slightly. "I might be ready to get out now." Dean glares at him. "You're staying right there until I say so," Dean growls, and Cass just smiles up at him, the curl of his mouth totally smug and pleased with himself. "If that's what you want," Cass chirps, amused and happy, and damn right it's what he wants. And today is his day off, and Dean is going to have sex until they're too hungry and sore to have sex, and then they'll order Chinese food, and then do it again anyway. And Cass just laughs as Dean shucks off his boxers and splashes his way into the tub, splashing water everywhere, and whatever. It's stupid to have a tub set into the floor of a room. Dean just yanks Cass close, scraping his stubble across Cass's neck before biting where Cass's neck meets his jaw. "I missed you, you know. I've been waiting to have you to myself again," Cass gasps as Dean presses him back against the edge of the tub. "Dying to just unplug the phones and tie you to the bed." Dean groans as Cass slides his wet, slippery hands over Dean's back so he can wrap a leg around and grind his dick against Dean. "Fuck, maybe later," Dean says, because it doesn't sound like that bad of an idea to him either. "I'm a jealous person," Cass says sweetly, like that's not the understatement of the century. "I don't like sharing you. If I didn't think the Steinbrenners would have me shot, I wouldn't let you leave the apartment. I would just keep you here, and I don't think we'd ever get out of bed. Except maybe to fuck in other places in the apartment." "I wouldn't mind," Dean shoots back, hitching Cass higher, then just shrugging and lifting Cass out entirely, laying him out on the cold tile, Cass crying out in surprise and arching his back. Dean just smirks as Cass glares at him, easing Cass's legs into the tub, spreading his legs until he's splayed open there so Dean can grab the lube they keep on the other side of the tub, for precisely this reason. Dean slicks his hand up as Cass starts to whine, "Dean," and pushes two fingers into Cass sharply. "Oh, Dean, Dean, Dean," Cass chants, tight and so hot, fingers scrabbling for purchase on the wet, cold floor. Dean grins as he blows cold air across the head of Cass's dick, bobbing thick and flushed red over Cass's stomach. "Think about how nice it's gonna feel, huh, baby?" Dean croons, scissoring his fingers, stretching Cass quick and dirty. "As soon as I've got you all good and loose for me, I'm gonna pull you right back in there and put you on my cock. All this hot water, warm you up. I know it's cold." Cass pants out a cry. "I'm ready," Cass breathes, fast. Dean grins and shakes his head, slipping in a third finger. "You're just impatient. Just a little longer," Dean promises, running his other hand over Cass's hips, stroking down the cool skin there. "I don't mind. I just... Dean, now," Cass says sharply, and Dean chuckles. "We have all day, you know. I'm not going to be happy with just a quick fuck in the tub. Because, baby, being honest, I'm not going to last too long. Want you too bad," Dean whispers against the defined cradle of Cass's hips. Cass snarls, and his palms skid against the wet floor as he struggles to slide himself closer to Dean. "Dean, I swear, if you don't..." Cass hisses at him, and Dean just laughs and laughs as he tugs Cass into the tub quickly, and he barely has time to settle Cass on his thighs before Cass is reaching around and positioning Dean's dick so he can push himself down on it all the way to the hilt. Dean really hopes he doesn't pass out in the bathtub because he doesn't want the post headline to read, "Yankees pitcher dies in tub, pitching." "God, Cass, you feel good. You feel so good, baby," Dean babbles. Cass is breathing like he's gone for a run, wrapping his legs around Dean's back like he's in yoga class, and Dean can feel Cass's fingernails digging into his back in familiar half-moons. "I can't wait to go to work on Monday," Cass grits out, trying to push himself even further down on Dean's cock. "In fact, I would take it as a personal favor if you would be a little rough, maybe some hickeys. I want to walk in there and make sure everyone knows I fucked a World Series champion this weekend." Dean groans. "I'll have to see what I can do about that," Dean grants, weakly as Cass bends down to kiss him, biting at his mouth. Thank you," Cass purrs at him. Dean laughs brokenly as Cass clenches around him. "Yeah, because that's such a trial for me," Dean jokes, and Cass just hides a smile in Dean's shoulder. "I'm pushy and demanding that way," he agrees, "which is why I feel totally comfortable telling you to fuck me harder, Dean." Dean just grins at him. "You've got all the leverage here, baby. I think you should do some of the heavy lifting here," Dean insists, lazily. Cass pauses, blinks slowly, then smiles like Dean's going to regret it. "Our maid is going to quit again," Cass promises, biting down hard on Dean's shoulder. Dean just braces himself, and sure enough, Cass uses some sort of octopus inhuman muscle group to stretch up above Dean, nearly pulling off entirely before slamming himself down on Dean's cock. Dean just laughs breathlessly as water sloshes over the edge of the bathtub and hooks his arms back over the cold, tiled edge and lets Cass fuck himself loose and stupid on his dick. And when Dean's ready, he just grabs Cass by the hips and holds him down, coming long and hard, frantically jacking Cass, half in the water, half out. Indulgently, limp-limbed, Dean bites and sucks this ridiculous high school-sized hickey right under Cass's jaw. "Are your fingers pruny?" Dean asks, mock solicitously, contently making a little more sensible hickey close by on Cass's neck. Cass murmurs drowsy assent, shaking his way through the end of his orgasm. Despite the fact that it should be a crime to have to move after great orgasms, the water is getting cold and they slip and slide their way out of the tub to damply fall back into bed. "More sex later," Cass pronounces, before tucking himself close against Dean's side, half-heartedly dragging the sheet down over them both. The end.